the Premier League on OTB. Exclusive Premier League live commentaries every Sunday. The very best expert analysis on your phone and for free. Download the OTB Sports app now.
OTB AM. With Gillette, put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.
Bang on 7:30 this Monday morning. You're very welcome along to OTB AM. It's Ger Gilroy and Owen Sheehan with you all the way through until 10. If you want to get involved, we'd love to hear from you. You can leave a comment on the YouTube stream. You can also get us on Twitter at OffTheBallAM or any of the other social media platforms in which we are and in which we exist these days. We're ready for you. Come at us as you have been all weekend, ever since Ireland couldn't quite get the job done against Azerbaijan. A lot of you have been like, well, give me a new contract now, what? Yeah, well, fair play, very articulate, good man. Yeah, well done. You must be very proud of yourself. Here's what's coming up between now and 10 o'clock this morning. The performance rankings, we're going to get straight into them. And Ireland will be in the red, don't worry. Sports pages at 8:05. Mark Lawrenson's thoughts. Be interesting to see who he thinks should be the next Republic of Ireland manager and what the credible list of candidates is. We've got Stacey Grimes, we hope, at 8:30, celebrating Meath's victory against the Dubs in the All-Ireland final yesterday. Nathan Murphy at 8:45, talking to us about Leona Maguire, maybe a little bit about Mayo, maybe a bit about the Republic of Ireland. Jason Smith's going to join us for our Paralympic update at 9:05. Ashling O'Reilly in tears at full-time as Meath won a match which she had predicted from like months ago, saying this is a possibility here, it seemed pretty good. It turned out she was bang on, 100% correct. And then further reaction from the weekend at 9:30. But a little bit earlier than normal, we're getting into the performance rankings.
You know, that wasn't an All-Ireland winning performance.
Probably should have won the game based on their second half performance.
Is it a step too far to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
OTBAN's performance rankings with Gillette.
I'm scratching my head. Our performances was just lacked that intensity.
Bam. The performance rankings bring you the bad, the good and the grand from every weekend of sport. And we always start with the bad. We always start with a negative tone. Turns out the biggest story in Irish sport is actually a negative one this morning. So we're getting the good stuff up and running and out straight away. I can sense a tone from your conversational speak to the audience this morning, Jared, that you've got something to say about the fallout to Ireland versus Azerbaijan. They're naturally in the red, the Republic of Ireland. What do you have to say for yourself?
They should be in the red. The performance wasn't as good as it needed to be. There were mistakes made. There were mistakes made in team selection, and then there were mistakes made across the course of the game. I mean, that's obvious. There was a very good conversation I had yesterday. John Duggan was hosting, and it was Gavin Comiskey and Vinnie Perth, and I disagreed with bits that were said across the whole thing, but in general, the thrust of what was being discussed about was that Irish football is in a deep-seated crisis that has been ongoing for a long time, and it's going to be a while before we get out of that. And so what are we trying to do to get ourselves out of the crisis? Do we view the senior team in isolation and say, OK, this is the only part of the crisis that exists, or do we actually take the view that the whole thing is in crisis and needs a plan to get out of that crisis? My view is that we need a plan to get out of the crisis, and that the best person to try and spearhead that over the next period of time is going to be Stephen Kenny. The four people put forward as potential replacements are Roy Keane, Robbie Keane, Neil Lennon and Chris Hughton. I actually don't think any of those people would be better at the moment to take Ireland through the next 18 months than Stephen Kenny. That's my view on it, and I understand that a lot of people completely and fundamentally disagree with that. They think it's nonsense. Dan McDonald talked about one of the texts in yesterday. Maybe I'll call it up in a second so I don't butcher it. But it's a fairly complicated scenario, right? It's not that complicated because it's supposed to be a results game, and everybody says, if you don't get results, you have to go. I mean, okay, fair enough, but we do know it's a World Cup qualifying campaign, therefore these are more difficult. The whole notion that we expect to beat teams who are ranked 100 and whatever in the world anymore simply by virtue of the fact that our ranking used to be better than their ranking is kind of dinosaur. Like the stat that was doing the rounds about how many full-time employees Azerbaijan have in their academies versus our academies was interesting. Like, do we just not pay any attention to this? That does not excuse the team selection being wrong. It would have been great if the post-match had been, well, actually, This is why we did this, this is why we did this, this is why we did this, this is why we did this. It didn't work for us. Mm. Now, it nearly worked. In the first 6 minutes, if Aaron Connolly sticks the ball away, then we're having a completely different conversation. I think if we score in the first 8-9 minutes of the second half, we're having a completely different conversation. But such are the vagaries of football.
The text and off the ball yesterday described Stephen Kenny as an amateur in a professional world.
And Dan's point?
He says these are the extremes of opinion, but it does highlight why so many people in Irish football are invested in him working out. It's because there are people in this country who view them that way. Then he says, it's possible it's not the right man. He's not the right man for the job. But if the legacy of his time cements a view that anyone working in this country is inferior, that's not a good thing. And it's bruising in the long run because the well-being of the game is not going to be reliant on homegrown coaches. Goes on to say he's not giving him a free pass for the mistakes, but and also not a reason for extra time just because he's local. But the preconceived notions fueling some views in his struggles are not really constructively adding to the debate. It's adding an extra layer of emotion to it, though.
The view was that Brian Kerr failed because he hadn't managed at the highest level in England. And that was the view that was allowed to take hold. And to replace him, we got somebody who was managing at Walsall in Steve Staunton. And because he played for Ireland in the World Cup and so therefore was a legend. That's been the level of thinking that has gone into this type of selection and managerial selection in the past. And it is, it seems to me, at the heart of much of the criticism that people have of Kenny, that there's a kind of self-loathing involved at the middle of it. It's like, well, unless you've actually been, you know, unless you've been at Charlton, how can you actually know what it's like to speak to an adult human being about football? It's like, really? I mean, is that where we are? Is that, and how are we ever going to fix that? Are we always going to be reliant on the dysfunctional football culture in England to save our football culture here? And if that's what you want, if that's the type of life that you think is the right one for our football, well, then we should have a debate about that, because I think you're wrong. I actually don't think that, like, having some mediocre English but Irish qualified players playing for Ireland, it's not going to work anymore. Those players who may be good enough for international football are being scouted by their own country in a way. That's not to say that we shouldn't still take the children of Irish immigrants. We absolutely should, 100%. I think it's very important that we continue to do that. But it's not a policy anymore. It's not a sustainable, future-proof way of building an international side. You need a football culture, and we need somebody, I would argue, at the top of the tree who understands how that football culture works. Maybe Stephen Kenny's the wrong person for that. But I would actually give him an opportunity to find out.
And I think that's a really key point at the end. He doesn't have exclusive rights on a style of play or on a positive football culture, but it does feel that everybody who wants him out, their fix might be a quick fix in the guise of a Big Sam or a Neil Lennon. Like, Neil Lennon is the favourite right now to become the next Ireland boss if Stephen Kenny is removed. Does anybody think that that's actually a good idea? Does anybody know that that's going to be a good idea? Like, we've been talking about the Republic of Ireland national team as its own entity, really, forever, it seems to me. Not really a product of a footballing culture in Ireland whatsoever. Just this random thing that is a life of its own and has its own ways of, it has its own little universe almost, where you've got that, and then on the other side of things, in the bold corner, you've got the FAI in general, you've got the League of Ireland, you've got grassroots football. And those two things are on entirely opposite sides of the room. Surely a more progressive FAI, which we hope we have in stock now compared to the previous FAI, will start to reconnect those two things, because one can feed the other and it should be this beautifully symbiotic thing. But it's never been that way, and there are huge growing pains that are going to have to be experienced for those two things to come together. You mentioned there that we can't keep relying on a dysfunctional football system in the UK to be producing players for Ireland, or producing managers for Ireland, as it might actually be. And that becomes even more abundantly clear now, given it's going to be harder for kids to get over. It's going to be impossible for kids to go over there with new Brexit rules. That puts really an emergency state in Irish football to start producing players. And I think that should be the state of emergency across Irish football in general, that there needs to be some level of like self-sustainability going on here. And that's not to say that Stephen Kenny is definitely going to work out whatsoever, but the thought process to appointing him, I thought, was sound. And the thought process behind where this project should be going seems sounds to me, and it seems like something that will reap rewards eventually. But it is hard to stand over a few of the results. There's no question about that.
Yeah, look, I mean, the results are ultimately going to be the stick that everybody beats them with. And talking with Phil Egan outside, he's making the point that people are going to use this game on Tuesday night as another stick to beat them with, the team who could potentially win a group with Portugal in it. It's like, it definitely feels like there's a lot of, we're watching Messi and Ronaldo in the Champions League, and that's the football that I want my team to play. And if I can't have that, then I demand that we beat Azerbaijan 3-0 at home every time. It's like, that's not really what happens. That's not really how football works in a lot of the anger that's coming through. And then some of the anger that's coming through, they don't want progress. They don't want anything to be progressive. They just want their mates to be in charge so that there can be better access and insider information and knowledge. And I don't know. I'm pretty grimmed out by the whole response to this, as opposed to it being, right, let's examine how we're being, how we have been badly served by football and the administrators and the coverage of that over the last two decades. And like, because loads of people have been writing about this, and instead of us actually paying attention to that, and instead of us going, well, what's the net outcome of this? We end up with these kind of knives being sharpened for whoever's in the job that comes from that background, which I think, maybe I'm not explaining myself very well there, but I'm trying to get to Dan's point about people don't want Stephen Kenny to succeed because he comes from the local background, and therefore, I don't know, maybe it would confuse people that they have to pay attention to the football on their doorstep and be interested in it.
Potentially, like there's something in that. I'm not sure if people, maybe they do, but maybe I'm not sure people necessarily want that. I'm sure people want to be able to care about that, but maybe they just don't, and maybe it'll take some sort of level of persuasion that they feel needs to come from topping this group and qualifying for a World Cup. I'm not sure, but like, what's an interesting kind of discussion here is what the FAI will do. Like, I think it's been discussed quite a lot what everybody thinks should happen, but what do we think will happen? What do we think the new FAI will do if we use the new in connection with the FAI? Because it seems to me that the new FAI would look an awful lot like the old FAI, were Stephen Kenny to be sacked after Tuesday night. And let's not dance around this, Jared. Like, this morning, it's been reported on a couple of the back pages that if Stephen Kenny loses tomorrow night, he is done. That is the severity of the reporting that we're seeing here. So this is, if we're to believe it, who are we seeing here? We're seeing the Back of the Star, the Mail, both going with that line.
That's the opening line of the piece in the Back of the Star this morning. Stephen Kenny's reign as Ireland boss could end if Serbia win at the Aviva tomorrow night, says Paul Lennon in the back of the Irish Daily Star this morning. The FAI hierarchy is increasingly concerned over the direction of the side that limped to a 1-1 draw with Azerbaijan. And then defeat would mathematically end Ireland's interest in next year's World Cup qualifiers. Just see any quotes in it. Board Chairman Roy Barrett stated in June he believed that Kenny should remain in his post for the next campaign. This is not the unanimous view of his fellow directors. That's what it says. This is not the unanimous view of his fellow 11 fellow directors. Should Ireland lose to the Serbs, a board meeting is expected to be called for later this week or early next week, at which Kenny's future will be discussed. Looks like the leaky board is the same as the old board. Mm. Maybe the new FAI is the same as the old FAI, I don't know.
Mm. Seems it's like kind of hearing a song and you can't really place it, but it sounds awfully familiar. And it is interesting that's being stated. Like, I mean, that's pretty strong. It's a strong line to be your lead piece of information, that this man is under threat with his position tomorrow night without any public statements coming out, isn't it? It's like, there was no press release from the FAI saying that he's got one day to save his job. There's certainly no one going on the record saying it. So this again rings a bell, this song.
Here's the list: Roy Keane, Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, Neil Lennon, Stephen Reid, Lee Carsley and Sam Allardyce would all be contenders to succeed Kenny.
Like,
big Sam. Let's go through this. So Big Sam, is Big Sam a progressive move for Irish football culture? Or are we going to have a team of Kevin Nolans? If that's what you want, lads, you know, great. But how's that going to help our football culture recover from the bit where we're completely reliant on England? Which is not going to happen anymore because they're going to stop taking our players because of Brexit, which we've known about for the last 5 years. And in the meantime, we've set up a brilliant academy system to make sure that those best young players are going to be... Oh, no, wait. I mean, if it wasn't for Dermot Desmond at Shamrock Rovers, would we have any... How many full-time professional coaches would we have coaching kids in this country? I don't know. Not many. So Duffer. Duffer is the Ireland manager on the basis of his experience with Shelburne and with Ireland? No, because he was a brilliant footballer. That's why. Does it make any sense?
And like I think that once Sam Allardyce is thrown into the mix, I think it probably shows the direction that becomes available to you. It goes back to this point about what is the Irish national team there for, other than to, I guess, try and bludgeon your way to a World Cup every 20-something years, potentially, but probably not. Try and get to every second Euros, maybe not. And are we going to separate it totally from the point? Are we going to try and paper over the cracks that exist when it comes to everything feeding into this team by trying to bludgeon the team's way through stages? Like, to be honest with you, I'm saying that, but I'm kind of half-hearted in saying it because, like, I'm not necessarily sure the results necessarily take an uptick. Like, I don't think it is a short-term fix. I think a short-term fix would suggest that the results are going to get better straight away under one of those managers. And I don't see that. I don't see that happening at all.
I think Lee Carsley could be a potential Republic of Ireland manager in the future. But yes. Lee Carsley has a brilliant job at the moment where he is clearly on a pathway. And I don't know if he's going to give up that pathway to come to a situation with the Republic of Ireland where, you know, we like to eat our own. We feast on our own mistakes and inexperiences, and we get off on causing ourselves trouble.
Like, it does seem to me, though, that if you're compiling a list, if you want to make a case for Stephen Kenny to be sacked, you're compiling a list that has Lee Carsley on it. You're compiling a list that has Stephen Reid on it, because you know that will bring in a few more sides to your argument. That will suit your argument. Lee Carsley has no intention of leaving the FA, an organisation that has got its house in order big time over the last couple of years. Do we really think Lee Carsley would be interested in coming to the FAI? Like, I mean, it's a very convenient thing to put into a list of managers, because all of a sudden that list looks gilded in comparison to the list of Neil Lennon and Sam Allardyce. All of a sudden it's like, hey, I can be progressive with the list of progressive managers, that are potential managers, I should say, that could come in and replace Stephen Kenny. Therefore, let's get rid of him. Like, is this list based in fact? Is this list actually what the FAI have compiled privately? If so, then let's have a conversation. But you can't just say, listen, Pep Guardiola could come in and replace Stephen Kenny, so therefore we need to sack Stephen Kenny. The decision to remove your manager is only as good as the replacement. Like, that is it. And right now, do I actually believe that Lee Carsley will be a replacement? No. And he's like, you're right, he's one of the better names on it. But can we get to a stage maybe where there is a decent enough record, a decent enough culture within the senior teams, the best teams under the FAI umbrella, where you can start to reattract some of that coaching talent from abroad? I'd like to think so. But I'd like to think that maybe this is the sort of pain that you need to go through in order for those conditions to exist down the line. So I don't know. It's like, I'm not convinced that there will be a quick turnaround in fortunes, to be quite honest with you, but I'm even more convinced that there won't be any sort of long-term success if such a decision is made.
You mean Neil Lennon's not the man to turn this around? Because he, you know, just coming off the back of such great work, according to all the Celtic fans.
Yeah, like, I mean, in a way I kind of feel like sorry for Neil Lennon that he'd even be dragged into this conversation, because for all we know, I mean, he's not even heard about this job coming up or hasn't even expressed any sort of private interest. He just happens to be top of the list, and therefore he's just left himself open to being criticised like that. But I mean, I don't see that whatsoever. I think you look at somebody's recent managerial efforts, and if you're going to make a decision to sack somebody in order to bring that person in, you'd want to be a bloody good replacement, and you'd want to have a lack of doubt around your recent record and a lack of doubt about what you're actually going to bring to the table immediately. But here we are at 10 to 8 in the morning discussing what Neil Lennon will do to the formation of Irish football.
When actually we should be talking, I think. I mean, again, just if you want somebody who's at the coalface of Irish football, have a listen to what Vinnie Perth was saying yesterday when he talks about the situation that we find ourselves in being a product of years and years and years of underinvestment and neglect and factional fighting. You can see the factions. If you just take one step back, you can see the factions evident on the back pages of the papers and in the former players, and everybody seems to have their tribe, and that tribe goes back 30, 40 years, whatever. Fair enough. That's, you mentioned the word progressive. If we want something that is progressive, a lot of people don't want a solution that's progressive. They want the thing that is their tribe and best for their small faction within Irish football, and maybe that's why we're stuck. Maybe that's what we'll end up with. You would hope that somehow somebody coming from outside that scenario, the current FAI CEO, is immune from that faction, but I don't know. We'll see.
Mm. Well, what is it Jack Nicholson says at the start of The Departed, that he doesn't want to be a part of a product of his environment, he wants his environment to be a product of him. Kind of, I guess you could say that that's what the ambition of the FAI potentially should be, that they would like their entire system to be a product of a really progressive, good national team, because there have been times in the past where there have been good national teams and it has very much seemed like total independent from the environment in which it should be a part of. Like, and I don't know, like, I still maybe harbour this naive belief that there are enough people within the new FAI, in inverted commas, that see why they made this decision in the first place to appoint Stephen Kenny, and see why patience needs to be taken on board at this point, and realise that a rash decision is not going to be the way forward for this new organisation or supposedly new organisation. And I would still have my doubts that they would actually take that decision that apparently is coming tomorrow night if Ireland lose. It's probably naivety on my part, but the question about whether or not the FAI are actually going to take swift action on Tuesday night if Ireland get beaten, I'm not entirely convinced.
One of the arguments is that they can't get a sponsor for the team. They can't get a sponsor for the team because the manager's not giving results. But the implication is that a new manager will get results, and a sponsor for the team will follow automatically, right? Mm. To follow that through, the replacement has to actually be better than what we have at the moment. And so which of those managers, as mentioned, is actually going to unify the country behind and say, okay, we're going to give you this next campaign to qualify or to bet in your style of play, and then it'll be the campaign after that. Bear in mind, the next campaign is a Euros campaign. And so if you're writing off that campaign with a new management team, then it's a World Cup campaign after that, which we never qualify for, even the bloated World Cup that it will be after that. And then it's the next Euros after that. So I don't know. I think we are so far steeped in blood at this point. Right.
We better move on.
We better.
We will come back to that as the morning.
Donnie Brasco, 1980, says, hashtag OTBAM, two words, Northern Ireland are qualifying for tournaments and getting results with much less resources, says Dave. But they had a manager that went through a really crappy run of form and bad results, who eventually instilled a style of play that the team believed in, and then they started to qualify. So that's a good example. I mean, I think that they would have sacked Michael O'Neill if people in the media had their way.
Yeah. It's, if you're going to use a Northern Ireland blueprint, then the start of the Michael O'Neill era is probably worth looking at as well. We move on to Dublin. Dublin's Empire is another that we've got in red this morning. To be honest with you, it's been such a positive weekend outside of Ireland that we're a little bit of straw clutching going on here, a tiny bit, but it is kind of interesting that at the start of the year you probably would have put your money on Dublin to win in the men's and women's.
The double.
Yeah, definitely. And he probably would have had more confidence putting it on the women than the men potentially as well, given that they were going for five, given that there was probably a big All-Ireland final performance in them. Like, what has been really interesting about this Dublin team over the last few years is their searing honesty in the face of winning quite a lot, where they've been unhappy with their All-Ireland final performances, but have won but they did win four in a row. So I definitely suspected that come an All-Ireland final that there was going to be a year where they blew apart the opposition, and that didn't happen yesterday. And that's down to Meath, who we'll get to in a little while, who deserve pretty much all the credit for it. But it's obviously kind of a little bit of a harsh thing to say about Dublin, because we wouldn't be saying this about any other county, but seeing Dublin beaten in either of those codes, it does, I'm sure, give plenty of other counties just that little inkling of hope. So like Mayo and Cork in the women's game for sure are probably looking at yesterday's result and thinking to themselves, God, we can absolutely reach the promised land next season. It just kind of it bats away at the immortality that it seems had been attached to a few of these Dublin teams. I'm not convinced either of the teams are gone away, much less the women than the men almost, I think, and they could definitely come back and win another few in a row. We will see. But I think given the year that they've had, it's not been a great summer for the Dubs. They go into the red as an entire entity. We will get to Meath in just a moment because it is all about them. But just in the grand, quick touching on the All-Ireland men's final this weekend before we move on.
Why is this called Tyrone instead of the men's final? I mean, I think what you've done here is you're giving Tyrone that chip that their shoulder really needs. It's a full bag at this stage.
Well, potentially. So the way I saw it was that the pendulum had been in Mayo's favour, and then after last week it had really felt that the pendulum had swung in Tyrone's favour. But did the pendulum swing roughly 7 or 8 days too early is my question, because yesterday when you're perusing the newspapers looking for some good All-Ireland football final preview, because of course it's the last Sunday editions before the final, you're starting to see the coronation of Tyrone. You're starting to see Joe Brolly, I think they actually pulled a quote and put it on the front of the Sunday Independent yesterday, not just the front of the sports section, the front of the Sunday Independent yesterday, saying, "I fear for Mayo." So I'm sure there are like thousands of Mayo Twitter accounts who in their drafts have, "What do you think about that, Joe Brolly?" saved with a photograph of the front of the Sunday Independent yesterday. I feel that the talk has now got so much about Mayo not knowing what to do with the shape-shifting opposition of Tyrone, and Tyrone being on a high, and that narrative has been beaten so far down the road already that it kind of feels like Mayo are the ones who are going to usurp Tyrone and actually climb the steps of the Hogan stand. Now, we do have another 5-6 days of this to build up, so the pendulum could swing right back into Tyrone's favour. But Colm O'Rourke also on the side of tipping Tyrone yesterday. Tyrone know exactly what it's like to be tipped against going into a big game. So I just wonder if this is actually the week that suits Mayo perfectly, that their 4 weeks have allowed them to go up and down and up and down again, and they're in the perfect position going into Saturday.
Are they in the perfect? I don't know. You have them still as number one in your power rankings, right?
I do.
Which means you expect Mayo to beat Tyrone at the weekend.
I do. I'm very nervous about that. Like, I would be very nervous about making any big prediction because it's such a new thing.
There's a good piece on the back of the Examiner about what does it mean for Mayo that Sally Rooney has a book out that has been so discussed this week from Michael Moynihan. And, the question I was going to ask, what does this mean for Mayo? What does this mean for Mayo? What does it mean for Kerry if Tyrone win?
I don't know. I guess it means that they can go back to number three in the power rankings, maybe. Who knows? The world is certainly their oyster.
You think it'd be a positive as opposed to a negative?
By the All-Ireland champions. I think it's...
Would that change? I hadn't even thought about that. It's more the ghosts.
But it's Malachy Kirkin making the point in the Irish Times this morning that everybody, not everybody, but a lot of counties would be watching this year's All-Ireland final thinking, Jesus, that could have been us. Like, there are a heap of counties in Ulster who will feel that about Tyrone, Galway will feel that about Mayo, Dublin will definitely be feeling it, and Kerry will definitely be feeling
it. I don't think Galway are looking at Mayo and thinking we're as good as that. I don't think they are. I don't think that's true. I think Monaghan and Armagh and Donegal would be looking at it going, we're close but not that far away. Not that it could be us, because I don't think those counties have the same belief that Tyrone have, because Tyrone have in their culture this thing which is like, you know, being the zombie killer of the greatest Kerry team since the 70s,
and nobody else really has that as well, and they have one of those.
Donegal should have it, shouldn't they?
Actually,
in retrospect, I'm disappointed that this Donegal team hasn't kicked on.
And there have been a number of excuses which have been legitimate at times, in fairness, down through the years. This year, I think, is going to sting them more than any other year if Tyrone win the All-Ireland, just given how that game against Tyrone panned out for them. Murphy getting sent off, Murphy missing a penalty before that. Like, that is a desperate way to
lose. Very early as well.
Yeah, it's a desperate way to lose any game, and to lose it to an All-Ireland champion would be just gut-wrenching. But Tyrone have that, as you say, that experience of being the zombie killers of the past that I don't think many other counties perhaps no other county really has, and that's what has got them over the line, their know-how in that big game against Kerry, which maybe they didn't even know that they had until they actually did the job. So I don't think necessarily it's a fair comparison, but I definitely think that those three counties and Ulster will be looking at Tyrone and saying, on the pitch, when it comes to the talent of players, we feel that we're almost as good as Tyrone, but when it comes to the know-how to actually win these games, maybe they're just a level above. So
you didn't tell me yet which is worse for Kerry, a Mayo victory or a Tyrone victory? So you actually think Tyrone victory could be good for Kerry?
No, the Tyrone victory would be worse. I think everybody wants to see Mayo win the All-Ireland this year, and I think regardless of what that
what if they're just not ready though? I don't think they're ready.
You think that, but yeah, and in fairness, if they're not ready, who cares, because Mayo have always come back and you can't write them off
for next year.
Whereas with Tyrone, is there a sense that maybe, so we could have a new championship next year. We probably will have a new championship next year. And given they've obviously had some precarious draws in the past, they've got to go through it the hard way every year, that maybe they need to strike while the iron is hot this year, and Mayo don't. But even as you're saying that kind of sounds ridiculous, because Mayo have had to go through the hard paths themselves in the past, had to play Dublin in so many finals, and this year now they can beat Tyrone. So this probably has an added layer of pressure to it from a Mayo perspective too. They are bookies' favourites still, I assume
they are. Yeah. I think it's has the price shortened a little bit. Tyrone are 11-8, Mayo are 6-5 on. Mayo -1 is 11-10, Tyrone +1 is 11-10 on. So
yeah, so I just feel that things have kind of swung back a little bit in Mayo's favour after the way the narrative's gone at the weekend. But there's just five more days for the people of both of these counties to get utterly carried away, as should be the case on All-Ireland final week. And we'll have plenty build-up for you as the week goes on. We should get into some of the good things from the weekend, because there were plenty good things to talk about. Meath, I think, is where we're going to start this morning. And this was just sensational yesterday. I tweeted that this has knocked Offaly off top spot as the best Gaelic Games moment of the summer. And they were definitely similar on joy. They may not have had Shane Lowry in the stands in jubilant form, but they certainly had Sean Boylan getting greeted by a bunch of the players, which was a pretty emotional thing to see. We had Meath fans all gather at the front of the hill in a mosh pit type scenario, which we haven't seen from Meath fans in so long. And we definitely haven't seen at a women's final ever, really, which was just brilliant to see. Of course, it is been one of the things that has been said about the women's game in the past, is that the final gets so much attention and maybe the rest of the season needs to catch up. But I wonder how aware the Meath players were of that before going into the final. They played in the All-Ireland final day last year. Granted, it was during COVID, so they wouldn't have got the full sense of the occasion, but they would have known how big an occasion this was. They would have known how much this was a real opportunity for them, given the chasing pack may actually kind of, I don't know, everybody will know what Meath are come next season. And I kind of felt that they might have needed to win yesterday, and it just seemed that pressure was not a factor whatsoever in how they played. They had a very clear, coherent game plan: get bodies behind the ball, break at speed. When you see Vicky Wall pop up with number 13 in her back for the throw-in at the start, and then not go in full forward and actually hang around the middle third and actually be the one woman counter-attack on many an occasion, like an actual human laser beam at times, you kind of started to think, right, this is a team that's well equipped to win this. The goal was sensational. I'm not sure if she meant it. She probably didn't, but you need those rubs of the green at times. The keeper was so far off the line, in fairness.
I don't even think grand, you can live your life like the little negative Nelly that you are. If you're like, oh, this amazing thing that I've just seen, there's no way that this incredible athlete who does nothing but do this all the time could possibly have meant it, because my tiny brain can't imagine it. If that's how we're going to live our lives these days, when you see something amazing, no, there's no way that golfer tried to get the ball in the hole from that distance. Ridiculous.
Yeah, I didn't really think too much about it, because it was a sensational goal.
You catch the ball from a kick out, the keeper's 25 yards off the line, you have a go. Who's gonna give you shit for that? Nobody.
They should have done it against
Kerry, or Kerry should have done it against Tyrone, shouldn't they? There was a chance.
But Meath were just absolutely incredible yesterday. Just this, and I think that this would have been a lot of people's first time watching a full 60 minutes of this team in action. And I think now we've started to come to the realisation that there was absolutely nothing fortuitous, nothing fluky about the way they managed to get to the final, and much less about the way they managed to win the final.
It is a fluke that they beat Cork in that scenario, because they're miles behind games in the last 30 seconds and they needed to score two goals, right?
Yeah, and there's a bit of a Cork collapse about that, but they were definitely good enough quality-wise to beat Cork, and they were definitely at home at this level, which is the very top. Like, it does create a beautiful rivalry, you suspect, over the next little while between Meath and Dublin.
And Cork. Cork must be thinking, Cork beat them in the first round of the championship earlier, and then in the group stage, and then get beaten by them, like, in... I mean, there's no stoppage time, obviously, but you know what I mean? In, like, the last kick of the game. Like, normally what happens when a team has one of those squeak into a final, they kind of underperform, right? Because it's like, look, that was our All-Ireland final, but there was none of that. It's mayhem. It's really weird when you see a team burst through like this, because it almost never happens.
Or what you get is like some sort of gallant defeat at some stage in the season where they, like, they come so far but then end up coming up short just a little bit, and it just never happened to this team. The comeback against Cork is obviously spectacular and it is insane, and of course Cork will be kicking themselves, but there is that attitude about this Meath team where they also had to capitalise on certain things that were handed to them late on in that Cork game. But it was that attitude that you kind of thought of later on in the game yesterday, where you're like, there's no way they're losing this. There's absolutely no way. Like, even okay, so in the last 60 seconds they're playing keep ball and they're going backwards, as you should be doing when there's a hooter system in place. But it even felt with like 3 minutes left on the clock, when they got like one of their last pieces of possession, they hadn't retreated into that level just yet. They were like, we need another score. Yeah. We need another score.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. I think we talk so much about game smarts and experience and how you need to be there and almost lose one to win one. All those were kind of deemed irrelevant and nonsensical by me 3 days
ago. Well, the only thing is that they had lost a couple of All-Ireland finals, like at intermediate, before they got up, and so that the speed at which they were able to absorb those lessons and then get new talent into the team, like, that's the other thing that we haven't really spoken about here, is that they have very, very young but sensational talent. So that would certainly give you hope that this is a team that's going to be around for the next couple of years and will drive standards and, as you said, drive interest. And like, because it did look like it was getting a bit boring there, with the Dubs just kind of handily keeping teams at arm's length and not being able to be beaten. And then obviously they have the pick, and the amount of women who are playing Gaelic football has exploded in the last decade, and so the next surge and input through of talent that's coming through in Dublin is going to be huge. And now other counties are going to see, well, maybe if we regrade and get everybody organised and get it, you know, everybody organised in the same way that Meath have done, there's a template there.
Yeah, like, it was also interesting as well, looking at what Mick Bowen had to say afterwards. Like, his interview with Aisling was amazing, actually, like, really emotional after the game. And even on TV, he was very quick to make a point about the quality of the spectacle on show. And it was a brilliant final. It was the best final in a while, especially that first half. It was so thrilling to see Meath kind of get their heads in front so spectacularly in that first half. But Bowden was quick to point out that, I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I think it should have been enjoyed, that spectacle. And that's been something that he's been a big, like, he's been so vocal in favour of that for the last little while, that there needs to be a spectacle on the biggest day of all, because everybody knows it gets the biggest amount of bums in seats, it gets far more eyeballs than any other part of the season, and having a good spectacle on that day is so important. And it has been something that's kind of put a dampener on the last couple of finals for him, and he was consistent in that yesterday. Despite losing, he could take some sort of silver lining out of the fact that it was a brilliant game and a really good performance from Meath.
All right, next.
Leona Maguire, because she is absolutely sensational. I mean, if we're talking about like Vicky Wall being a laser beam, then I don't know what Leona Maguire is. Just like the coolest sports person from this country, I think it's fair to say. Like, even, I mean, there's a great sense of anybody really after they get interviewed in the immediate aftermath of such an amazing day. Like, 3.5 out of 4 points so far. Nathan was making the point on Twitter that if she wins her singles match today, it will be the best rookie performance ever in the history of the Solheim Cup. So this is the standard she's coming off.
Not bad.
And even, like, speaking to Henny Koyak in the immediate aftermath, it's just kind of like everything is fine, everything is calm. I mean, well, what's it like? Why are you even talking to me? I mean, like, I just played a regular round of golf, and it's just incredible to see her bring that level of quality in her first appearance, which nobody who will have watched her play a lot will have been that surprised by. Like, it's been mentioned that she had to fight, like, if you want to like keep making the Mead comparisons, the way Mead had to fight at intermediate level for so long to get that level of bottle. Like, I mean, at amateur level, Leona Maguire was doing something similar, and I guess that probably is in the reservoir when she has a massive high pressure week ahead of her, like the Solheim Cup. I should say it's a week that should be high pressure, but it's not high pressure for her. There just cannot be, the way she's spoken and the way she's performed. She's playing with Mel Reid, or has been playing with Mel Reid for a lot of the weekend, and Mel Reid is injured. I think it's a neck injury she has at the moment. So she's carrying an injured teammate. She's coming up against some of the best players in the world, literally the world number one yesterday, and she is flying. It is an absolutely incredible couple of days that we've seen from her. The state of play is that they're from yesterday's perspective, so they would go into yesterday with a 3-point advantage, but then it fades pretty much as the four balls get underway. They won three of the four, or of the four morning foursomes, I should say, USA, and then Team USA were briefly leading three of the afternoon four balls. So it was looking like this could be a situation where you go into Monday with the USA in the lead. Okay. But they managed to pull it back, and yeah, sorry.
We'll talk more about this a little later on with Nathan as well. If you want to get involved this morning, 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. That is the performance rankings this week. If you want to get involved in our competition, you can win a Gillette starter pack. All you got to do is tell us who you think should be in the red, who you think should be in the amber, who you think should be in the green. Bonus points for creativity this morning, folks. So don't just give us Stephen Kenny in the red, don't just give us Ireland in the red, give us reasons why. And you know, we're a big, put us in the red if you want, we can take it. We're going to take a quick break. We're back with Mark Lawrence and Nathan, as I said, talking about Leona Maguire. We're going to talk with Stacey Grimes about Meath footballers' first All-Ireland football title. Next.
OTB AM.
12 minutes past 8 this morning. I'm delighted to say Mark Lawrenson is with us to talk to us about the Republic of Ireland situation and where we go from here. Mark, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm all good, thank you.
There's a big debate about the future of the Republic of Ireland football team and the FAI and all that kind of stuff. From your perspective, let's talk about the football first. Are you seeing any positive signs at the moment about what we're trying to do and how we're getting there?
I think you'd have to say that there's a slight improvement. I think we can all understand, people have been involved in football, what Stephen Kenny's trying to do. But the bottom line, like anything, is results. And I don't know, in terms of the FAI, grassroots, etc., are they piling loads of money into that? Are they, you know, in terms of improving the coaching, hopefully trying to make, for want of a better description, better players come through? So it's a really, really difficult one with Stephen Kenny, because in any other job, you'd say, certainly in a club job, he would have lost the job. I understand the patience, but there comes a time where you have to make a decision, which is, you know, we need to start winning some games. We need to start qualifying for competitions, because otherwise, in terms of revenue, we're not really going to have very much.
I think the short answer, and without going into too much detail, is that we haven't been piling massive amounts of money into grassroots. That, like, obviously, the FAI has its fairly well publicised financial issues over the last, you know, we essentially needed a bailout from the government to keep going.
Sure.
So we haven't had a huge injection of cash, and those young players, there's a kind of big gap between the players who are kind of 28, 29 and the 20, 22 year olds who are coming through at the moment.
The other thing about that as well is we're playing at times relatively untried players, untried at the clubs, not just at an international level, which is obviously in the majority of cases a step up. So that's always going to be difficult. You will have one or two who just kind of sail through it and they look like they've been playing international football for a long time. But there aren't many. And, you know, I think the biggest topic of all about the team when you see the team playing is, where are we getting goals from? Well, we're not really, are we? We're kind of nicking goals as well from games. I know. I thought we were good against Portugal. Although, of course, the bottom line with that is, you know, you get 1-0 up with relatively little, or few minutes to go, and you end up getting beat 2-1. So there's a little bit of worry about concentration. But look, we're obviously not going to qualify, as everybody knows. It's very, very difficult to know what to do. And then if you say, well, let's change the manager, who do you get? You know, what was our last two? Martin O'Neill, Mick McCarthy as well. And while you wouldn't say the football was fab, at least we were winning games and you know, occasionally qualifying for stuff. So it's just a really, really difficult one, isn't it?
Yeah, like, the thing is, I suppose, neither of those two managers qualified for a World Cup, and that's what we're talking about here. So, like, do you believe that there can be enough of an uptick that when it comes to the next Euros qualification, which, as you say, in fairness, Mick got relatively close, I guess, but I mean, if there had been an extra win against Georgia, maybe there wouldn't have been a playoff required. Or from Martin O'Neill's perspective, obviously, he managed to get Ireland to a tournament. So do you believe that over a period of time that there can be an uptick enough for at least the Euros qualification to be a reality?
Looking at the players and the quality of players we've got at the moment, no. I just don't see it. And you know, lots of the smaller nations, when you look at them, they are all improving, and we aren't. We're not really even standing still. If anything, we've started to go a little bit backward. And I know lots of players have been given the debuts under Stephen Kenny, etc. And you've got to give these lads time, but you just look at us and we just look like an average team. We're very difficult to play against. We work extremely hard. There's no problem with the work ethic or anything. We just, well, we haven't got a goal scorer, have we, which is the biggest thing in football, as everybody knows. But we don't create too many opportunities either. Defensively, we're quite sound, quite solid, organised. But, you know, anyone can kind of organise a football team to be difficult to beat, to be honest with you, within reason.
The contenders at the moment that we're seeing are the names that are being mentioned, as opposed to contenders, because we don't know. So Robbie Keane is named, Roy Keane is named, Damien Duff has been named, Lee Carsley has been named, although I'm not sure if anybody's...
He's not coming now, is he?
Well, that's the thing, right? So our Big Sam is the other one, and...
It's always Big Sam, isn't it?
Yeah. What do you think of that list? Because like
the list. Yeah, I can understand, but then you know, relatively unproven, isn't it? It's just such a difficult one. I mean, now Big Sam's a firefighter, isn't he? That's the basis of him getting the shout. Roy's obviously had jobs, etc. But it's just, you know, Robbie Keane. He's been coaching, as we know, but actually taking over is really, really difficult. And the other thing about it as well is if, say, you are Robbie Keane and you do want to manage, I think the clever thing, if possible, is to pick the right time to manage. He'll be looking at us thinking, oh, I'm not sure, you know, let's wait another couple of years and you might get some better players through and then I can have a real good go at it. So that's a bit, you know, do you stick or do you twist? That's the problem, isn't it? Would Roy Keane take it? I don't probably think that he would, no. Would he improve performances? Arguably, initially, yeah. Would he improve performances enough to win games? Probably not. And that therein lies the problem again.
And that's an interesting kind of topic about winning these games and which ones now need to be of top priority. Because you mentioned in the context of Big Sam there that he's a firefighter. Like, and that makes sense if you are in the lower reaches of the Premier League. You are literally fighting for your existence and you can't afford to keep losing games and go down. Maybe a very strange point to make, Mark, but like, is there a sense of, after they lost the first two games in this, that this is free hit territory for Stephen Kenny? I mean, they're not going to get relegated from their World Cup qualification group, obviously. The only thing that could have been worth anything is the top two places. So are they in free hit territory? Are they in a place where actually there is no firefighting that legitimately needs to be done in the short term, and we can take a really long-term view of this thing?
Yeah, we can. We can, but that, I mean, obviously that depends on the bodies in FAI, but... yeah, it is. It always has been. It was like the Portugal away game was really a free hit. But and then you see the problem. I think when you see our results, our last two results, therein lies the real problem, which is You come up with a good performance, which I think everybody agreed with in Portugal. One or two people, I think, went over the top and said it was an outstanding performance. I didn't particularly agree with that. It was a good performance. And don't forget that, obviously, Portugal missed a penalty in the first half, which would have changed not the result of the game, but completely the way that the game was then going to be played out. So, and then our problem is we come home and against what we think is a lesser team, and we struggle. So that's the problem. So you've got one decent game and then one game where we just weren't good enough in most areas of the pitch. It is a free hit, but the problem is it's, you know, free hit after free hit, but we're not getting any points. That's the other thing. So what we're saying is when it's a free hit and maybe players don't feel quite as tense because it is a free hit, we're not playing particularly well.
One of the difficulties that is going to face Irish football over the next couple of years in particular is that our best young players aren't going to be scouted by English clubs as a result of, you know, they're going to have European passports and it's Brexit related. So not until they're 18 will they essentially be able to go over. I'm sure there'll be some workarounds for some of the absolute young superstars who English clubs decide that they want to bring the whole family over and relocate. And that will continue to happen. It's already happening a bit. But the majority of the young players won't be coming over. And the FAI has never really invested enough in the league to make sure that the League of Ireland was of sufficient standard. There was a stat doing the round that Azerbaijan has way more academy coaches than we do. I guess what I'm asking here, is it actually time for us to reconsider where our place in the pecking order in world football is and be realistic about it so that we can have a long-term plan and a long-term approach as opposed to automatically assuming that we're going to beat Azerbaijan and we're going to beat Luxembourg? Football countries who maybe have got their house in order that we haven't.
Well, they have, haven't they? Because, you know, the old Luxembourg away was nearly a 4 or 5 nil win. I know occasionally teams had struggled. I think, did we beat them 1-0? I can't remember whenever it was. But yeah, definitely. It's almost been like a class thing. Well, they're no good. We're miles better than them. They as you said, have come on leaps and bounds. I didn't know about how many coaches, etc., Azerbaijan had and all those kind of things. When you look at us and think, well, what are we doing? You say there's a lack of money. There's obviously been kind of internal problems as well at the FAI. It's time for somebody needs to be a little bit brave, stick their head above the parapet and say, right, this is what we are going to do. And, you know, we're going to start to build. It's the only thing we can do. And we know there's talent. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And maybe Brexit, as you rightly say, it's going to help us in that degree. But I certainly think if you're a whiz kid playing in Ireland and you're 16, Premier League teams, as you say, will just bring the whole family over lock, stock and barrel, give their mum and dad a job and all that kind of stuff. So, but at least we've got to try and do something because it's just not working. And as everybody knows, you can't transfer players in. You can't go and sign a centre forward. So we've got to get on with it. But you're right. I mean, I'm going on a little bit, but you're right insofar as, you know, it's right, let's stop and go, right, where exactly are we going? What exactly are we doing? And surely now, if we start to try and build, it cannot be any worse.
That's the thing, that like some kind of long-term plan that everybody has agreement and is bought into. And then if the national team manager isn't performing or is making mistakes, you go, OK, we're going to get somebody else to do that. But it's part of his overall plan. That's why it feels like getting a Big Sam in or even a Neil Lennon is kind of outside of that whole plan. They're not familiar with the way that football in the country is being run or being played or interested at all. And it feels like what the FA have done is that they've made the English football team part of English football culture. It took a long time, but they got there.
Yeah.
They got there a bit by accident because they had Big Sam. But for the pint of wine, he might still be there.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, you know, Capello, you know, Roy Hodgson, etc. Remember Roy Hodgson with England in the World Cup in, where were we? Brazil. They lost the first two games. They were the first team to actually go out. And as you know, I mean, with the English press as well, I mean, it was like, get rid of him, get him out. He's no good. He can't do this and he can't do that. And I think eventually somebody at the FA, they've sat down and gone, right, this is what we're going to do. And I mean, you might say that Gareth Southgate, to some degree, was he was quite fortunate to get the job, because he's, but he was in charge of the under 21s. He's bright and he's intelligent, and he's done a decent job so far with England. I mean, the thing with England is you always get carried away, as you know, the journos, the tabloids, everything. You win a couple of games and football's coming home and all that kind of stuff. I mean, you played every game at home in the Euros apart from one, so they should have at the very least been in the semis. And we know they got to the final. But yeah, I think somebody's got to take a kind of overall view and say, right, you know, stop. Let's have a real rethink about what we're trying to do, what we intend to do. We cannot be any worse, can we? We cannot be any worse. But I don't know who's going to do it. I don't even know in terms of coaching, et cetera, tactically, whatever, at the FAI. I don't even know who's in charge of that. I mean, that's my own ignorance, but...
Well, the coaching ticket and the technical director and like technically it's all supposed to fall under there's a kind of dual structure where the international senior management and the technical director are kind of supposed to work in tandem, and that's right. Supposed to go through the system, and like there are a bunch of young players coming through, our underage teams are doing quite well, and people keep making the point that you could have had three of the starters at the weekend for the senior team could actually still be playing for the under 21 team, and they could have gone to a tournament. So there's definitely a conversation to be had about that. A texter wants me to ask you about Chris Hughton. Is it possible that, so Chris obviously has a job at the moment, although it's not going great for him.
No,
he might be available sooner rather than later. Would he be somebody who could immediately step into the international setup and improve results?
I don't know if the answer to that is because he's still got the same players, and would he make that much of a difference? And I mean, obviously, know Chrissy really well and played with him, and I think he'd be one who I would say to the FAI, let him come in and let him just reorganise anything. I'm not sure about improving the results. So you get straight away, you get an improvement because you've got a new manager and everybody's trying to impress him, etc. Still got the same problem. We can't score any goals, you know, literally speaking. So, but I would, if somebody said to me, would you say to Chris, would you come and actually run the whole football department of the FAI? Don't forget about the politics and all those kind of stuff, but give us a master plan. Give us a plan for a year, 18 months, 2 years, 5 years. Somebody like Chris Houghton for me would be excellent. Really, seriously, would. He's a deep thinker about the game. He's a good communicator as well, and he's a very moderate man insofar as, you know, when he had success at Newcastle and stuff like that. And I saw a couple of games and go and have a beer with him in the office, and you know, I say, are you doing well? He said, yeah, well, we're doing well at the moment. He said, but you know what football's like. So he's very temperate in that degree, and I think he would be really, really good. Do I think the FAI would do something like that? I'd probably argue no at the moment, because I don't think particularly they're thinking about 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, 2 years down the line. I think everything is immediate there with what I kind of see coming out of it.
Just on kind of some of the minutiae of Saturday night, Mark, like the goal that Ireland concede is obviously a pretty terrible lapse from those at the back, not coming out to close down a man who's clearly going to shoot is pretty poor. There are balls being passed out of play in the second half. There are opportunities being missed in front of goal, wrong options being taken at times. Can a new manager change those lapses immediately, do you think?
Well, you might get an immediate reaction for two or three games, and then I think they have a saying in football that, you know, players revert to type. So, and you just never know with players, and you know, in the split second when they make their decisions, whether they're right or whether they're wrong. I wasn't surprised by that result after Portugal, because I think it was one of those, every effort went into getting some kind of result in Portugal, and there's always going to be a come down. And I honestly, in international football, I think at the moment it's easier to play away from home than it is at home, because especially with us, when we play at home, we have to basically, you know, set the tempo for the game. And just looking at the players that we've got, we're actually better suited just to sit in and make it really, really difficult. And But if that's the height of what you're trying to do, we're not going anywhere, are we?
No, we definitely need some ambition. Kenny would argue, at least, that he wants the players to be comfortable on the ball and that it's going to take time. And that he is,
I get that.
You know.
I absolutely get that. And, you know, to be fair to Stephen Kenny, he's you know, trying to do what he set out to do. But not if you've got one person who's not comfortable on the ball, it can't work. And the other thing as well is, and as we said before, is you can't then draft people in like you could transfer them in regular football because it's, you know, it's just impossible. So there comes a time where, and everybody's got this way about, you know, the way that they want to play if they want to manage. But again without the players, it's almost impossible. And you've got to win games. You have to win games. That is the bottom line. But if then we decide, right, you know what? We're having maybe 18 months where this whole thing, we're going to change it completely. And we might have some even poorer results, possibly. But just hang on in there with us, because this is what we think we want to do. Well, this is what we want to do. And we think eventually it will improve. And then you can get your younger age teams playing in a similar way. If and that's probably the biggest if, you've got the quality of players. But if you say to me that, you know, younger age players coming through looks like they're going to be some decent players, well, maybe now's the time to do it. Strike while the iron's hot.
As opposed to trying to get a Big Sam or a Neil Lennon or even Roy Keane.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and Lenny and all them, yeah, and Roy, they probably improved us straight away. But ultimately, would we be qualifying for anything? I don't think so. Because we've still got the same old problem, that which is, you know, the hardest thing in the game is to put the ball in the back of the net, and we don't have a Robert Keane, Niall, you know, all the players I played with, Stapleton, Aldridge, all those boys. We just don't have those kind of players, I'm afraid.
Mark, good to have you with us this morning. Cheers.
No worries.
Good stuff. That's Mark Lawrence giving us his thoughts there after the Azerbaijan game and ahead of Serbia tomorrow. That game live on Off the Ball. It is Stewie Byrne alongside Stephen Doyle on commentary duty tomorrow evening for that game as well. So we've brought you those three games. The high of the halftime pitter patter, the inspirational first half commentary that Des Bishop was Instagramming about. Since then, it's not been that much crack. Fair to say.
Fair to say that, all right. The first 6 minutes of Azerbaijan is something that they can never take away from us.
OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Yes, Kenny should be given a contract to the 2024 Euros, then he can just get on with it without the sword hanging over him. Why is Gilroy only clued in on the crisis now that Kenny is in charge, says Will. When Mick was there, there was never any mention of the quality of players, just Mick's style of play. Why has he only copped it now? If Mick had been getting these results, Gerard would have been screaming every morning about the need to get rid of him. Look, the results haven't really changed, have they? I mean, sorry, Mick was obviously a much better manager. We were absolutely in playoffs on the basis of our qualifying campaign, or on the basis of the fact that in the Nations League everybody got a playoff.
Yeah, and I was actually just trying to kind of think out loud there, and I was chatting to Mark there. It was based on the Nations League, yeah.
Stephen Kenny is way better man for the job than those four. Ireland does not have the players. Let him build something. I've been living in Asia for the last 5 years and getting up at all hours to watch some truly awful football, says 32 Fogman from the national team. Results are not great now, but the football is at least palatable. It is such a fine margin between everybody waking up happy about life and a 2-1 win against Azerbaijan, 2-1 come from behind win, versus a this is all a disaster, isn't it? It's like, what's the even-tempered response to this? What's the long-term? Let's plunge ourselves into crisis. Let's get Neil Lennon in and see what happens. Is that really going to solve things? Is that going to bring a sponsor? Maybe Sports Direct roll in behind Neil Lennon. That's exactly what happens there.
And maybe Maybe those people who are saying that this is all a disaster and we need to bring Neil Lennon in now are right. And maybe the new FAI will never be the new FAI. And maybe the grassroots systems in Ireland will never be fixed. Maybe there is never any intention of that ever happening. And they will always be very independent things, the national team and the grassroots system. And the grassroots system will never be able to provide for the national team. And we will continue to export. And it'll actually just be a case of families moving to Britain instead of just individual kids.
Or Spain, and, or Italy.
Or maybe they just move to the EU and things go on the way they've always gone on, and maybe then Neil Lennon is your guy.
Right. Right now here at 8:35 this morning, we're talking about the rise of Meath football. Here's how Brendan Cummins called it on LMFM.
Meath still have possession. They've got to hold on to it now. Emma Duggan gives the ball out and goes for a return pass. She's still got possession. Gives the ball to Vicky Wall. Vicky Wall plays the ball forward. Meath working it in from the right-hand side of the field. And now we've got 20 seconds remaining in the game. This is amazing. The ball played to Sean Ennis. Meath are on the brink. It comes as far as Sean Ennis again, the Meath captain. She'll be receiving the Brendan Martin Cup. It comes to Emma Troy, to Emma Dolan. It's there. It's there. The Hooter. The Hooter is going. Meath are All-Ireland champions. This is the most amazing story I remember in sport. Meath win the intermediate last December, and now they're the All-Ireland senior champions. This is amazing stuff. They're going to receive the cup. Sean Ennis will captain them. They're going absolutely bananas out on the field. Meath supporters are going wild. They've won it by 2 points. 10-1 outsiders in a game. There were outsiders against Cork. There were outsiders against Armagh. But they are the champions.
Yes, they are. Stacey Grimes, good morning to you. How does that sound?
Yeah, it's a great feeling. Thanks for having me, firstly. But no, it's an unreal feeling. So it is. It's just mad. Like, I don't think it's really sunk in yet, you know. But it's one that I'll remember forever.
So tell us, we'll talk about the game at some point, but tell us what happened immediately upon the full-time whistle, and what has the last 12 hours been like? What happened? What happens when you're All-Ireland champions?
Yeah, it hasn't sunk in yet. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I didn't know whether to cry or to, do you know that kind of way? You're just, emotions are all over the place. Like, you've been working towards this for so long. And then finally, when you get over the line, it's a great feeling. It's something that I've never experienced before. But yeah, it's just unreal. It hasn't sunk in yet. And the girls, it probably hasn't sunk in for the girls yet, but it's just mad.
How long do you spend on the pitch? Are you there for a good while and trying? Because we've seen pictures of Sean Boylan in the crowd, and I guess you've family and friends in the crowd that you go and look for.
Yeah, no, we actually got a good while. Like, with last year's Intermediate All-Ireland final, obviously we didn't get a chance really to go around much because obviously the senior one, so it was really special now that obviously the crowds were back in and stuff like that. So we actually got time to go around and embrace the crowd, and it was just great. The crowd was unreal, so it was.
And then after that, it's obviously, where's dinner? Do you go home? Did you go back to Meath last night?
Yeah, so we went back to Meath last night. So we went back to Knightsbrook. So there's a great reception back at the Knightsbrook. It was unreal. I never seen any of the likes before. There was a big crowd back here, and the kids are there, and all the supporters made their way back from Cor Park or from their houses when they watched the game. So it was really nice. It was really nice to see. I've never seen that before.
That's class. It's kind of the unexpected bit where, and it's got to roll on there for another couple of days as well. Or do you need to go back to work fairly soon? Have you got a day or two to celebrate this?
I know, a day or two to celebrate. No, look, you know, like, you're not in All Ireland every day, so you need to embrace this and really enjoy it. You know, it's something that's we, like, obviously this hasn't been done, so it's great. You know, so we're going to really enjoy ourselves and really take it all in. But yeah, no, we have a few days. I'm sure the girls have a few days as well, so it's nice.
What's that moment in the dressing room like in the immediate aftermath when it's just yourself and your teammates, knowing that this chaos back home is about to ensue?
Yeah, like, it was actually quite calm in the dressing room. We're actually quite, like, after the match, you know, because it's such a big hype up for it, and you're kind of just coming back down off it. But look, everybody was ecstatic. They couldn't, like, it was just a great way to finish off the year for us, and look, we're going to enjoy it, and it was just unreal. Like,
How did the whole day go on a personal note, and I guess with the team in general? Was there a sense beforehand about the magnitude of the occasion? Because certainly the performance didn't suggest that at all. The performance suggested that you'd played in five senior All-Irelands in a row yourselves.
Yeah, look, we knew what we were going to be coming up against Dublin. They're great champions. They've won four, so we knew what we had to do. We knew we had to stick to our game plan and really go at it hard and really perform, you know, because if we didn't get a performance, we wouldn't have probably got over the line. And look, all the girls stepped up, the management as well. And look, we got the result on the day and it was great, you know.
Was that the singular focus at the start of the year? Once you get promoted, was it to win it again, do back-to-back, even though it's at a higher level?
Look, the probably main one was to stay up. But at the end of the day, like, you know, you're always going to want to push on forward. And as the momentum built, we had that belief. We got the belief after every game that we played that we actually can go and do it. And I think after all the games we've played, we really believed in ourselves and we believed in our ability. And I suppose not many people might have given us a chance against Dublin, but we believed that we could do it. And look, that's all that matters, that in the inside, that we believed that we could do it, and we did it, like, you know.
When did that belief begin to become real? Was it actually last year when you won the intermediate that you started to get confidence? Because we had Eamon on during the week and he was talking about how after the last lockdown he was surprised at how fit everybody came back. They came back even fitter than he thought was possible, and all of a sudden it was like, actually, hang on a second here, we're going to even kick on from last year as opposed to just staying up. So when did you actually begin to believe properly?
I suppose it was kind of after we won the league, like we beat Cav and then Kerry, we won, bet them in the National League. And after that, we push on. Now, I know we had a bit of a slip against Cork, but we really fixed up after that and really like assessed what we needed to do. And look, we kind of just built on that. And, you know, you're always going to have to come back fitter than you were from intermediate into senior because it's a level up, you know. So you always have to push on, you know. So it was great. Like, obviously, the girls, great condition coming back. So that really benefited us when we hit the ground running back and training, you know.
Eamon Murray was very at pains to point out that there's a massive team effort behind the scenes as well. He seems like not somebody who is prone to massive bouts of ego. It was real kind of, oh no, hang on a second, I'm a facilitator here. We've got great coaches, we've got great strength and conditioning. The players themselves obviously had to take personal responsibility for their own individual fitness and then come as a team. So that's a very powerful, calming influence, I guess. What's he actually like?
Yeah, look, the management team and Eamon Murray are great. Great, they really know their own roles and they're really nice people to be involved with and to work with. And, you know, they've taken us when Mead Ladies Football was on its knees and they've brought us up to this. So a huge credit goes to the management team and their setup. And Eamon Murray, look, they've, as I said, they've brought us to this point. So like, we can't thank them enough as players. And we really got behind them to really push on to show how hard they have worked. So, yeah, look, it's great.
Is this emblematic of kind of an uptick in fortunes all throughout Meath, do you reckon, Stacey? Is that reading too much into it, or is this the start of a football boom, I guess, at underage level, especially in Meath?
Well, like, the membership in ladies Gaelic football has increased, so like by I think maybe 2,000 members from last year to this year, if I'm correct, I'm roughly around that. So look, it already has made a massive impact and it's great for young girls to look up to and see that no matter what, like, you can always, you know, aspire to play football and enjoy it, and you know, one day you could be there, you know. So it's great, like, and look, it has started a lot, like, even like the crowds there yesterday was unreal. Like, it was just it was just class. So it was, it just, every time we got a score the crowd lifted, and then every time we turned the ball over it was a roar again. So it was great, like, you know, it was like the 16th man in the stadium on the field, you know. So it was unreal.
How has the style of play changed from being an intermediate team to a senior team? Because it seemed as if at the start of the year you might have been very strong defensively, but that was a real attacking threat that was offered. Anytime you turned the ball over there was real intention to score straight off that possession.
Yeah, we knew that, like, obviously intermediate was going to, you have to step it up a lot, you know, and the pace was going to increase. And we knew that we had to transition the ball fairly quick, because if teams get back in defence, they're going to set up their systems, you know. So we knew that we had to really focus on the transition and break fast, and look, it happened for us anyway, so it was great. Like,
the Dubs yesterday, obviously their team, a storied, famous team, they've been around and they've been kind of in the vanguard of the popularisation of the sport and kind of crossover from it just being a sport that kind of was talked about at one stage of the year to being the rest of the year. So obviously, you know, the expectation is that they're going to win and they're massive favourites for the match. In the game, at what point in the match is it when the goal gets scored that you have the confidence that this is actually something that's different? Or is it even after that, later on, when you're seeing Dublin do uncharacteristic things like taking pot shots or, you know, snatching at stuff? In the match itself, at what point do you start thinking, actually, you know what, this is going to happen for us?
Yeah, but look, everything kind of clicked, you know, on the day. Everything went well, and obviously when Emma got that goal, like, it obviously spurred us on even further, and I created that gap, you know, so that we could sustain the lead and really get a good start. And the points were going over from everybody, so it was good, like, you know, so everything just clicked into place when things started. And look, you know, you always have to fight to the final whistle, you know, as it proved in Cork game, that you always have to fight to the final whistle. So we knew going into the game that it was a 60 minute game. It wasn't just going to be obviously a 30 minute or 45 minute. We had to really fight for the to the very end to get over the line. And look, we did that.
What's it like training with Emma Duggan? Like, she's a magician. What a lot of people, I think a lot of people, the vast majority of people, have become aware of her this summer, more so than any previous season she's had at underage level or at senior level. So what's it like getting to see that up close and personal multiple times a week?
Oh, look, Emma Duggan is a phenomenal player. She's extremely talented for 19 years of age. She came into the setup, I think it was in 2019, and look, she's grown from there. She's a great athlete. She's a great, like, person as well. Like, and she's just a really nice girl to be around. Like all the girls, it's a great environment to be around, and the management team and everything like that. So look, it's a really nice setup to be involved with.
And it seems like some of those players just come alive at the biggest moment in Croke Park in the open spaces, and that was certainly the case with her yesterday.
Yeah, exactly. Look, Emma can shine any day. You know, she's a great player. She takes her shots when she needs to, and she's a great worker. She works really hard. And look, yesterday proved, and all throughout the season proved, that how good of a player she is. And like, it's just great for her, like, you know.
Stacey, you've been working as a games development officer for the LGFA and me. This is going to make your job a little bit easier, I suspect.
Yeah, no, it's great. I started in the role in April, so
good timing.
Just finding my feet. Obviously, still, it's going to take time to build, but obviously, with the success of the Meath ladies and our minors won the Leinster there as well, and you know, it's growing. Ladies football in Meath is going to grow, so it's really going to have a really good benefit to the Meath ladies in general.
No, for sure. And I think for the sport as well, it's great when you have a brilliant team who comes and sets standards, but the games where they lose are always the games that everybody remembers forever. So you've been involved in one 24 hours ago, Stacey, and it was definitely one of those matches that captured the public's imagination, because seeing a great team dethroned, it's kind of the definition of good quality, top quality sport. So congratulations, well done.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Stacey Grimes there, part of the Meath football team, who stopped the Dublin 5 in a row yesterday. We'll hear more from Aisling Riley a little bit later on. But here is Meath manager Eamon Murray speaking with Aisling in the aftermath of their All-Ireland final win.
Then again this morning, look, coming up today, there was a lot of people around below at the bus and getting autographs. I said, that's not going to be good. They're going to get tired. And we came up then and into the dressing rooms, and we went in to talk, and they were so calm and focused, just complete focus. We sort of split each 50-minute period at a time. If you win the first 15, win the second, don't think too far ahead. Don't worry about it. Special for everybody, special for the country, special for the management, really, I don't take much praise myself for it, but we're bringing a management team there, and Michelle, the liaison officer, one of the best you could ever dream of, the hard-working lady you'll ever meet. This is for her. This is for Paul and Paddy and Shane, Mark, Eugene, for Mary there, for Fergal Harney, who got me involved, and for all the county board and 7,500 members. And it's for the whole country. This is the whole country going to win here today, not just us.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. Whenever a great team gets dethroned, it is for the whole country, and I think people felt that way a little bit about Mayo in the semi-final. Speaking of which, we'll get more from Nathan about Mayo later on in the week. But for now, Nathan, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, lads.
Well, we'll talk about Leona Maguire in a few minutes' time, but we've got to start with the Republic of Ireland football team. And I don't know, it felt like we were definitely wedded to the long-term plan after the Portugal game. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, it seems as if there's speculation now about Stephen Kenny not being given the Euros campaign, which everybody always gets if you're going to be the Republic of Ireland manager. So what's your take on what we're seeing in the aftermath of the game against Azerbaijan?
Yeah, I read those stories this morning, and it seems from other sources that like there's nothing in that, that Stephen Kenny's job isn't under threat tomorrow night, but like, the home performances haven't been good enough. And the problem for Stephen Kenny is they haven't been able to kick on. So every time there's been a performance to get behind in Slovakia, the first 65, 70 minutes in Serbia, and then Portugal, you come back home to the Aviva Stadium and you think, well, now is the time to show where the transformation is in Irish football, where actually we have more possession, we create more chances and we score more goals, something that we haven't done really convincingly since the Trapattoni era. And it hasn't happened. They've just fallen completely flat. So I've been listening to the conversations this morning, and there is that debate of how much can you separate the chronic underinvestment of Irish football for the last 20 years and put it alongside what's happening with Stephen Kenny, and then have, or should it be a separate conversation where, well, actually Stephen Kenny's in charge of this group of players, and is he getting the best out of them?
Well, the trouble is that I don't think the right team was picked, except we haven't had the opportunity to find out exactly why all of the changes were made. You actually brought up something before this run of games saying that Kenny felt that they lacked energy in the game against Luxembourg because players who weren't playing at club level were being asked to play two games back to back, and clearly that seems to have been in his thinking. And so they made changes, and then they made changes again at half time, which was earlier than they would have done, but they just seemed to make the wrong changes. That seems to have been the issue.
Well, if you look at what was good about Wednesday night, Ireland played to their strengths. They got the very best out of their best players, who are Seamus Coleman and Matt Doherty. And even though they're playing in wing-back positions, they managed to enable them to have a huge influence on the game. So to suddenly take Coleman out of that wing-back position, to move Matt Doherty, to bring James McLean in, didn't seem to make any sense at all. Now, I thought, having again watched the Luxembourg game, that maybe they might have learned some lessons, that Ireland can play a couple of different systems. Play five, play three at the back, five at the back, whatever way you want to describe it, against Serbia, where you know Serbia are going to come and are going to be comfortable in possession, and you can play a counter-attacking game. But at home against Azerbaijan, don't take a midfielder out for a forward. Take a defender out for a midfielder and suddenly dominate possession, be able to build up. But sticking with three at the back at home, and also taking Coleman away from right wing-back, where he was outstanding on Wednesday night, just didn't add up. And I think against an Azerbaijan, you can play Coleman and Doherty as right back and left back and almost get as much out of them in a three at the back if you have the right midfielders in there. So right from the moment I saw the starting 11, initially I thought he was going to go with a back four. And then you see that actually he's going with the back three. I was really, really surprised by that. So yeah, I would agree on the team selection. I don't think they got it right. And we just don't have any goals. And these results have been coming.
Yeah.
And I understand the questions of if Mick McCarthy did this, and Mick did win the games, and maybe that is the difference. Maybe Mick McCarthy was able to win a game against Gibraltar because of his experience that Stephen Kenny wasn't able to win against Azerbaijan. But Ireland beat Gibraltar 2-0 at home with an own goal and an injury time goal from Robbie Brady. You look since Euro 2016 and the stats are all out there. You've beaten who? Literally nobody. All the weakest nations, and that's it, and scraped by them. Haven't scored goals. 17 competitive home games since Euro 2016, 11 goals. And the only forwards to score in that time, David McGoldrick and Daryl Horgan, are no longer around. we've spoken about this consistently. It's interesting. I think this time last week, we said how it's a low-key build-up for Ireland and everyone's focusing on Ronaldo and transfer windows in the Premier League, and how we'll be back to this deep dive into the future of Irish football with the way results would go. But Irish football has fallen off a cliff. We know that. We know that after that class of 92 of Doherty, Duffy, Hendrick, Brady, that there's this massive vacuum where no players emerged for 6-7 years. And now Stephen Kenny's in a position where he's having to give first-team experience at international level to players. Adam Ida has started more games at international level than he has for his club. Like, that is not a position you want to be in as a manager. So there's a huge amount of different things that are coming together at the same time that are making it a bit of a nightmare for Irish football. And it hasn't been helped by the fact they can't gain any momentum. They haven't won people over with the performances. And it does seem from listening to a lot of the pundits that Anthony Barry is having a big influence, and that that influence is working away from home, but that maybe Ireland have been a bit too conservative at home. And clearly, we know we don't have the players that, that Chelsea have to play in that system.
Well, but, look, I mean, it's odd to call adding an extra forward conservative in the home game. They obviously felt like an early goal, if that happens, is going to give huge confidence to that team. And I can understand why they did the thing. It'd be just good to have one of those conversations afterwards where it's like, look, this is my thinking. It didn't work. If we'd scored that early chance, it might have worked. The XG stats were like us to be 2 points something and them to be 0 points something. And you're like, look, your man scores a worldie from 35 yards. Yeah, he should have been closed down, but it's still side netting from 35 yards. Very difficult to stop. And I'm not defending it. I think that we have an inexperienced manager who's going to make mistakes and there will be teething problems. The teething problems are fairly pronounced, partially because of the COVID issue, partially because of the scenario we find ourselves in, as you point out. They have no playing stock to pick from who are seasoned in the Premier League or even seasoned in the Championship, who are playing week in, week out. So I don't know. That's,
I agree with all that. And the one thing, and listen, obviously at the time, I think most people were in favour of Stephen Kenny getting the job. The one thing I was always wary of was the talking up of the players, because we have no control over that. And even going, looking towards the European Championship, and I think Stephen Kenny should get the opportunity to bring these players from 10 caps to 30, 40 caps and see what they can do. There are no guarantees. And I've been looking at this over the last few days. If you want a perfect example of the problems that Irish football face right now, look at Norwich. In several different ways. So Andrew Omabamadele comes on, makes his debut, is outstanding. Understand why maybe he wasn't thrown in again at the weekend. And you were talking about at the start of the season, you know, maybe he could be the Irish player of the season in the Premier League. Third, fourth choice at Norwich. And then they go and they sign Ozan Kabak from Schalke, who spent last season at Liverpool. And suddenly Andrew Omabamadele is fourth, fifth choice at Norwich. You hope maybe they let him go on loan at some stage, but there's a really good chance he's not going to see much first team football. And likewise with Adam Ida, who has been a backup for Teemu Pukki, who has had most of his appearances off the bench. Suddenly they go and spend 10 million on Josh Sargent from Werder Bremen. And, which maybe sums up neatly all the issues, Christos Jalas, Greek striker, club record fee for Norwich, 10 million, who plays for PAOK, who came off the bench against Bohemians in the game Bulls won at the Aviva Stadium. So that money's all going back in to Greek football. 10 million for a 19-year-old striker who we probably think is at a similar level, far less experienced in some ways than Adam Ida. But he comes in and Ida now finds himself fourth, fifth choice. And you're wondering, in a year's time, is he still going to have started more games for Ireland than he's going to have started at the club level? So Stephen Kenny doesn't have any control, and we're so reliant on English football. And that's going to, there's going to be stats next week when the Europa League and the Champions League and the Conference League start, that practically every country around Europe is going to have, even countries at a similar level to Ireland, are going to have 6-7 players, if not more, playing in those big European competitions. We'll have who? Matt Doherty? Pretty much it. Maybe Liam Scales gets in at Celtic, but they all have players playing in the leagues, in the Belgian league, in the Dutch league, who are going to be gaining this sort of experience. And because we're so reliant on English football, our players are going to be stuck in a little bit of limbo, like Jason Malumbi has been for the last couple of years.
Yeah, and look, you hope Malumbi has a season where he actually gets week in, week out football on a team who are playing well and winning some games and involved in big games where there's tension and pressure, and that he benefits as a result of that. I think it would be ludicrous at this point not to give Stephen Kenny the opportunity to put into practice over the course of a European campaign the lessons that he's learned. It's completely pointless to make the investment that we've made in him and his playing staff in terms of the caps and in the coaching ticket and getting a good coaching ticket together, and not give that the opportunity to come through this World Cup campaign, which frankly we knew we were never going to qualify from anyway. So yes, bad results will mean that we actually end up with a harder draw in the Euros. That's fair enough, but it's a competition that we should be qualifying for. And at that point, you can see whether or not he's up to the job.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think Mark Lawrenson summed it up, that this idea of bringing in a Chris Hughton, Big Sam, that because of their experience, they're suddenly going to transform it. Like, none of those type of managers who've ever come in previously have had to deal with a squad as inexperienced as all of this. So the same issues are still going to crop up. There's no great Wes Hula and Andy Reid type debate of how players are being left out. Yes, we can say, should he have done this system? Should he have done that? Like, the alternatives are still very inexperienced players one way or the other. So I would agree. I think Stephen Kenny and every Irish manager should get a European Championship campaign. And if you don't qualify, when half the teams in Europe qualify, I don't think you can have any excuses at all. But also, I want to see in, and we are still probably 18 months away from the start of those Euro qualifiers. I know there's a Nations League campaign, which is very important between now and then. But most of these players at club level, you would hope, will have developed. And most of them, because of the way things are going, will have 25, 30 caps, will have experience. And the highs have been good. Like, the performance levels against Slovakia, against Serbia, against Portugal have been as good as we've seen. There have been real signs of progression and confidence. It's just, as you say, if they got that early goal, like Ireland, the first 10 minutes, and you're thinking, well, this is exactly what we want. This is the continuation. Confidence is high. And then it just fell completely flat and they weren't able to change it. And maybe, again, there's questions about the sort of in-game management substitutions, about being able to either see a game out or to go and claw a game back. But I don't see a benefit to a Chris Hughton coming in. Chris Hughton is on the verge of being sacked at Nottingham Forest. Turned on Forest and Sky at the end of last season, and halftime analysis was the pundits exasperated at the way Forest were playing when they were trying to push into the playoffs, as to how negative they were and how route one they were and how there was no ambition at all. And that would be the conversation we're going back to, a pragmatism that maybe it does bring success. And it does feel that this is the only opportunity, though, that if this doesn't work out, we will be going with pragmatism for the rest of our lives.
A new dark age, to quote Winston Churchill, everybody's favourite despot. 2 minutes past nine this morning. If you want to get involved, we'd love to hear from you. Hashtag OTBAM on Twitter or Facebook. Just for what it's worth, our understanding is that there is no risk to Kenny's job, regardless of what the result is against Serbia. Now, obviously, if they get beaten 4-5-0, things change again. But I think that drumbeat of tension that's being continuously built up around him is all essentially, I don't know. You get to make your own mind up about what you want for the future of Irish football, and you can see that there are definite factions within the football family. And some people want Kenny out. Some people always wanted Kenny out. Some people didn't want Kenny to get the opportunity in the first place. And after results like Azerbaijan, they're going to sharpen their knives. So consume everything with a pinch of salt, I would say, this morning. Let's talk about Leona Maguire, because it's one of the all-time great rookie performances, according to you. If she wins today, is that true? Would she be the best rookie of all time in the Solheim Cup if she wins her singles today?
Yeah, absolutely. She's the only player this week who's going to play in all five matches. If she wins today, she'll have 4.5 points. The record for a rookie was at the last Solheim. Celine Boutier got 4 points. So even Michelle Wee, who's the greatest American rookie, got 3.5 points, which Leona Maguire already has. So that is the level of trust that Katrina Matthews, her captain, has put in her, that she's not just there as a rookie, she's there as a leader in this team. And it's just been an outstanding weekend. The Solheim Cup always, always delivers. There's a bit more rivalry and tension and dislike of each other, it seems, in the Solheim Cup than there is in the Ryder Cup, where it can quite often be pally-pally. There always seems to be something controversial in the Solheim. But Leona Maguire has been the star of the show. And I think for so many people in Irish golf, this is a moment they've been waiting for a long time, where she completely announces herself on the world stage. And this is a week for Leona Maguire that has been a lifetime in the making, a lifetime of good decisions in the making. Like, she's done her own thing. Everybody remembers the Maguire sisters from when they were kids and the expectation. But she's been patient. She has gone about her career and her life the way she wanted to do it. And she's arrived here 26 in what's still technically her rookie season on the PGA Tour. She's come to the Solheim Cup as a mature, fully formed, world-class golfer who doesn't just look comfortable, who looks like a leader on that Solheim Cup team. And you can see that in the fact that she's been put out for every single match so far, and to come away with 3.5 points out of four and to beat the world number one. Nelly Korda has been by far and away the best golfer in the world this year. She won the Olympics. She won a major championship. She had to win that major championship to get her sister Jessica into the Olympics as well. So the added pressure. And Leona Maguire beat her in both foursomes. And really, Nelly Korda fell apart mentally over the couple of days. Just, I think the controversy that everyone might have seen had an impact. But Leona Maguire goes out this afternoon with Europe leading, we should point out, overall, 9-7. They need 5 points, having won last time. They need 5 points to retain it. So she's going to be going out against Jennifer Kupcho, who has a very similar career path. They went up against each other. They were two dominant players at amateur level, two world number one amateurs. Leona Maguire, the greatest amateur there has ever been in the women's game. So yeah, it's going to be a fascinating day, but wow, what a week for Leona Maguire.
Can you give us 60 seconds on the controversy? All I saw was Twitter going absolutely crazy, and I was like, ah, and so something about the 10 second ball drop.
Yeah, so 13th hole, Nelly Korda has an eagle putt, which just rolls ever so slightly past the hole. And then Madalena Sagstrom, the European player, picks up the ball because it's a tap-in and throws the ball back to Nelly Korda, gives her the birdie putt, and everyone is moving on. And suddenly a rules official says, you didn't give it the 10 seconds to drop into the hole, to which the European said, well, it wasn't overhanging. It wasn't going to drop into the hole. So what's the problem? And the rules official said, yes, it was overhanging. Now, it had gone past the hole. You could make an argument that the very outer edge, VAR style, the very outer edge might have been slightly overhanging, but there was no earthly way. We could still be here right now, and that ball was never going to drop into the hole. In a tournament like this, the Americans could turn around and they could give the Europeans the next hole to level it back up again, but the Americans took the ruling in their favor. The Europeans were incredibly, incredibly upset, and it's added a nice little bit of tension. There was no reason at all for the rules official to get involved. Like, the Americans, when this happened, hadn't complained. Like, Jessica Korda or Nelly Korda did not look at it and think, oh, why did you pick that up? It was about to drop in. Nobody believed it was going to drop in. But for some reason, the rules official decided to intervene. And yeah, it all blew up from there.
Could Korda have come forward a little bit more, been a bit more vocal about her support for the good intentions in the game of golf?
Yeah, I think they could have. Like, a lot goes on in a Solheim Cup, a Ryder Cup, in terms of the amount of people who are involved behind the scenes, the captain, the vice captains, the various different rules officials. There seems to be a lot of confusion as to what was happening, even amongst the rules official, when it was pointed out to her by Sandstrom that actually the ball wasn't overhanging. She seemed a little bit surprised by that. So whether the rules official had seen it herself or was sort of tipped off by somebody on the American side that this is what was happening, but it just seemed like a cheap shot. Like, it's not about to drop in the hole. So where does that end?
And who won the match?
So the Americans go on then. I think the Americans win that match.
They did. They won by 1 point.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
One hole, I should say. Sorry.
If it comes down, and like, the Americans, even though they're 2 points behind 9-7, will still feel relatively confident because, like, they have six players in the world's top 25. Europe have one player. Like, it's on paper, it was not a strong European side, and they will expect to win the single. So it could well come down to that 1 point. But this, as I say, has happened before. There have been rules issues. There have been lots of tears and anger amongst both sides of things that have happened. But it was brilliant to watch last night. And Leona Maguire, every time she popped up, she was holding a 25-footer. She was playing with Mel Reid. It was sort of a fire and ice type partnership. Mel Reid gets into it, likes to show her emotion, likes the fist pumps. Whereas Leona Maguire was getting into the fist pumps as well, but you can tell just likes to keep things as calm as possible. So she's in a good position. She's third out. It all gets underway about 5 o'clock this evening. She's third out. Could end up in an opportunity around there to have a real influence as to whether Europe can get over the 5 points. Last time round, it went down to the very final putt on the 18th. It's the only time in the history of the Solheim at the Ryder Cup.
Okay.
And Suzanne Pedersen had a birdie putt on 18 to win it in the final match. So that's how tight it can be.
Get to a TV,
it will be a huge achievement. It'll be, yes, it is all right. 100% well worth watching.
Nathan, good stuff. Thanks very much for that. OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Here's what we got on OTB Sports Radio today at 1 o'clock. It's OTB Gold with Joe Malloy meeting Gerlach Nan. State of the Union, Keith Woods, rugby show. All of it still holds. It's from pre-COVID. The classic at 4 o'clock is The Brawl. That's your documentary?
It is actually, yeah. What a week for Mayo it's going to be, 25 years on.
OTB Gold is Jack McCaffrey with Joe. And then 7 tonight, it is the show live in glorious Technicolor on OTB Sports Radio. That's the best place to listen to us these days. Just say, Alexa, play OTB Sports Radio on TuneIn. Or, OK, Google, play OTB Sports Radio on TuneIn. Or I would do Hey Siri. She'll only start playing it in the middle of this, and that would be embarrassing for all of us. 10 minutes past nine, we're going to take a quick break. Jason Smith is standing by. We're going to talk to him about another gold for him in the Paralympics next.
OTB
AM. 10 minutes past nine this morning now. Allianz Paralympic brand ambassador Jason Smith won gold in the 100 metres of the T13 final at the Tokyo Paralympic Games. Allianz Ireland has been a proud sponsor of Paralympics Ireland since 2010 and has partnered with Jason for the last 6 years. Jason, good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. I'm not too bad. How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. What part of the world are you in at the moment?
I am up home, so I live just outside Belfast, so just taking it easy, enjoying the good weather.
And how has the post-games recovery been for you this time around?
Haven't been home that long, to be honest. I was home Thursday evening, and I always, to be honest, post the games is always, even though you're off training, you're really not off, you know, you're running around doing lots of other things. So I don't even feel like I've really had time to stop and think, really, to be honest. But, you know, it's nice. It's nice to be home and around family.
Well, stop and think for just for a second. What have you just achieved?
Another gold medal. Obviously, this situation was a lot different than the other situations. But I think if I really stop, and we don't do it often as athletes because you're always looking forward and looking at what's next. I stop and kind of look back at what's been a very long career. Sometimes I feel like I have to pinch myself for what an incredible journey it's been and the success I've had and the opportunities and experiences that come with that, you know. So it's it's been incredible, and Tokyo was an incredible part of that.
Can you give us any sense of what that feeling is actually like then? Just right now, when you're thinking about that journey, what are you thinking? What is the feeling, the overriding feeling that you have at the moment?
I think like there's different parts of it. I think of like when you look specifically at a race and just post winning the 100 metres, is a huge part of it is relief. Like what people don't realise is how much you have on the line. And it all comes down to one moment. And in my instance, 10 seconds. And mistakes have consequences. So I think for me, a huge part of that moment is relief. But when I look back at the whole games or my whole career thus far and just the success I've had, it's somewhat been unbelievable. It's been incredible. 17 years. 21 gold medals in total and never been beaten at a Paralympic major championship. But again, behind the scenes of that is so much work and so much sacrifice has been put in by me and other people. And, you know, the success has been a result of the work that's been put in and being consistent and consistently motivated over that time. But it's really been incredible. And I don't really know if there's one word to describe it.
That undefeated title that you mentioned there, Jason, does that flash through your head when the final goes to a photo finish?
No, not at all, actually. When it goes to a photo finish, what flashes through your head is hopefully it's me that's slightly ahead. And it was a bit of a strange one crossing that line because I didn't. Like, I could see the Algerian here right beside me. But when it's that close, you can't obviously tell who wins and doesn't win. I thought it was me. I thought I seen him celebrating a bit, so that made me think, was it me? Then I can't actually see the screens in the stadium to know who comes up first or second on the times. And it wasn't until a little bit later that I asked an Irish athlete or staff member at the around the side of the stadium. Was it actually me? So yeah, it was a bit of a strange, you know, you had this delayed 30 seconds a minute with the unknown, but everybody else actually knew you had won. But just at that stage, it's thankfully it was me, and I just about did enough.
Is part of the relief as well, Jason, some of the injuries in the build up to the games?
Yeah, and that's something that again, everybody sees the 10 seconds in this one moment, and also everybody sees that I've had success in the past, and the expectation is just to continue on that success. But, you know, what gets the athlete, and in my instance, to that point, what's the challenges you've had to overcome, how you've managed the situations. And I think that for me has, when I look back at all the success I've had at a Paralympic championship, that's for me been the sweetest. Because of I've had a rough year with injuries, because all of a sudden you had a couple of new athletes who had run quick, and one of them had run quicker than me. So, you know, when you kind of package that all together, the odds of me going on to winning were significantly lower than they ever have been. To put it together when it mattered in that one moment is, you know, extremely satisfying, and it just makes, as I said, that whole experience moment that little bit sweeter.
How bad were the injuries, and was it at one point or another looking like it might actually threaten your place at the games?
Yeah, I kind of had a number of issues, and one of them, so the first at about 4 months of back issues, which kind of came off about a year ago, around the post-COVID, like the significant lockdown we had for 3 months, which then completely hampered my whole winter. I remember thinking around December, January, is this going to be me done? Which wasn't me even thinking about the Paralympic Games at that stage. Just about kind of got through that and kept pushing forward and moving forward. Further behind than obviously a lot further behind than what I wanted to be, had to make significant changes around my training, which obviously making changes on this year is not what you want to do, because that's higher risk. What works, you kind of want to stick to. Then I had more issues as I started to try to run a bit quicker, and around April, May, Achilles issues. Had to completely adjust when I was going to compete. I wasn't able to run much in around then for a bit, only raced twice, and it was at that point when you're getting so close to the games, not anywhere near where I needed to be, you start to wonder, are you going to make the games? And if you can make the games, are you in the position to be competitive? And that throughout the rest of the summer, you know, I wasn't quite where I needed to be, but the bigger picture was getting things right for Tokyo, and you know, we were able to manage that. And that's not me, it's just me and those around me, coaches, physio, S&C, manage that situation. And you know, when we look back, we got the timing absolutely spot on over the last week or two before competing. My training times had started really kicking on. But like the reality is, if I had been a few weeks earlier, it was a very different ballgame. So, you know, we had no time for error as well in that. And, you know, just for it all to come together when it needed to be in that moment, and just about coming together is, you know, a huge relief and huge satisfaction.
At 34, did you think this might potentially also be your final games, or have you not made that decision at all, so that isn't part of the relief too?
No, I wouldn't say that's part of the relief at all. You know, I always said before the games I'd still like the idea of going to Paris, but I would always get to Tokyo and take a bit of time to reflect and see what the best decision is to make going forward. But I think if I stop and look at it from a performance perspective, you know, that it was the second quickest time I had run in any Paralympic championships over my 16 or 17 years career, considering the summer of or the winter I've had. There's huge room for me to run faster, and that's something that I will, you know, gives me hope and optimism looking forward. Can I get to Paris in another 3 years, which would be 37, and still being able to at least be where I'm at, but not be better. And for me, that's certainly possible. And, you know, that's something that I think I've lived a lot of my career trying to do, is live on what's possible and try to break down those barriers of what people see as impossible and try prove it through my journey and my sport.
Well, that's really interesting, right? Because what the risk is that somebody is able to go faster and you might lose your unbeaten record, but you still actually are comfortable because you've done something that you thought was not possible. Is there a trade-off there in your own thinking that, like, how amazing it would be to finish undefeated, but actually trying to get the best out of yourself over the next 3 years might mean more to you in the long run?
Yeah, and that's absolutely the risk. And with time, just looking at odds, as time goes on, it's an increased likelihood that, somebody knocks you off your perch. But for me, it's not about looking about what anybody else does, because they're going to do what they're going to do, and I can't influence that. It's about looking what I can do and what I believe I can do and how I can improve. And, you know, for me, when I look at that and look forward, I would always rather be in the situation that I tried and pushed through what are probably going to be greater challenges than someone also that just decided, you know, nearly to stop facing them. And, you know, that is part of what's probably been the biggest satisfaction about this year, is it's been the greater challenges. And, from again, my experience in sport, the greater challenges that you face are the moments that you learn the most, the moments that you improve the most, the moments that you grow the most. And I mean, that's not just sport, but that's what life's about. It's about overcoming the challenges and trying to press forward and try to get back up and try to improve.
Because it must be tempting to walk away with an unbeaten record.
It is, yes, absolutely. There's no doubt it is a tempting thing to do. And that's just the balance of when up. When is the right time? And it's not just about, you know, when is the right time to go around being undefeated or not, but it's also, you know, there's a huge sacrifice goes on at home. You know, I have a wife and two young kids. I pretty much didn't see my family all summer long. And there's so much goes on, so much that my wife would have to take a lot of the burden at home. So there's a lot of things to balance and manage. And it's about taking all those things into consideration. But, you know, for me, my motivation's not my issue, and it won't be my issue. I think that decisions will be made where, you know, I am physically and how I can continue to improve or not.
Fair enough.
And that obviously gets harder as you get older.
Of course, yeah. Time remains undefeated. Jason, great stuff. Congratulations. Sensational result and a sensational performance. Thanks a million for joining us.
Cheers.
So Jason Smith there, always interesting to get his perspective. Unbeaten, what a record, what an incredible record that is at Paralympic major tournaments. 23 minutes past 9 this morning here. If you want to get in touch, 0879 180 180 is the WhatsApp number. Ashley O'Reilly joins us next on OTBAM. Turns out there was one person tipping the outsider's mead in the build up to Sunday's All-Ireland final.
It's hard because you have to go with your head and not your heart, you know, and I suppose what my head is telling me is that Royals are going to do it.
Okay, on that note. Yeah, it turned out, Aisling, you were correct.
Oh, hello, hi. Sorry, I didn't know you were there. Yes, unbelievable. Yeah. You didn't believe me. You did not believe me. I know you didn't.
Well, it didn't make any sense. This is a story that doesn't make sense. It didn't make sense that they were going to be able to come back from where they were in the game against Cork. And it didn't make sense that they performed so brilliantly in the final. You kind of feel like it didn't make sense that the start might have made some sense. But then the fact that they were able to see it out, none of this makes any sense. It's bonkers, and it's glorious bonkers.
Yeah, no, it is. Look, as much as I believed, and obviously I've been watching the team for a lot of years now, so I know what sort of system that they've been working on, and I still was thinking to myself, this is a massive challenge. Can they do it? You know, I know they have the fitness. I know that they have the backroom staff that know the type of tactics. They know what they need to go out and do against Dublin. Can they do it? Is it too soon? Is it a year too soon? All of them things were going around in my head and everyone was doubting them. So I thought to myself, oh God, am I after making a huge mistake here? Maybe I just should have said that, you know, look, they're a year or two, you know, too soon for them. But it was just, I can't describe what it was like up in that media box. And I have to be neutral as well. I'm doing the updates and everything. And it's hard. It was really hard. And I was so emotional watching it. Boris Staunton was with me. And, you know, she was grabbing my arm at one stage. And, you know, it was great for the ladies' game to see this. You know, she was like, this is phenomenal to see them playing like this. And yeah, it was just no words. It was just brilliant.
Corey gave the game away full time. Ashley O'Reilly's in tears beside me here.
Yeah. And I cried the drop of a hat, but like, I couldn't. I was literally could not stop crying. Just looking at those girls, like, some of them have been on serious journeys. Like Vicky Wall, she talked about her journey a few times. You know, I remember her coming back into the panel when it was just after her leaving CERT, and, you know, she struggled to get back on the team and she was coming off the bench. She had a tough time, and to see her go out there, she is in phenomenal shape. She's obviously doing serious stuff like away from the pitch as well. And she went out there yesterday with one thing on her mind, and they were winning this senior. She got the ball from the throw up one second into the game and went straight for goal. And that was when I said to myself, they can do this. They definitely can do this. They're up for it. They're like raring to go.
We've got footage there of, I think, is it Vicky meeting? Oh, it no, is, it's yeah. Stacey. It is Vicky. Meeting Sean Boylan at the full time. really emotional scenes from, like, and I guess, you know, we've spoken a good bit about how, oh, it's ridiculous that they've been able to come back from 40 points down to beat Cork 4 years later, 5 years later, whatever it was. And that's great. You reach an All-Ireland final, but then you're supposed to do what you're supposed to do, which is roll over for the Great Dubs team, which is one of the greatest teams that we've seen since the Cork team, obviously, who are probably still and will be forever the greatest Gaelic football team. But they didn't do it. The point you make from the throw-in, it was very clear. It was like, hang on a second, this is what Dublin do to teams. They'll score a goal off throw-ins fairly regularly. It's there was an aggressiveness about Meath's ambition, which was not an underdog thing. It was, we're Meath. It was that kind of stereotypical, actually, we should be here. Why wouldn't we be here? Why wouldn't we believe in ourselves?
Yeah, it really was. The hunger, the fight, determination, everything. And as I was saying, like, if I was looking at it on paper, okay, so what do Meath not have that Dublin have? Why are Dublin so far ahead of them? Okay, experience, maybe the older heads in the dressing room, all of those things. But everything else, I couldn't say that Meath didn't have. So that's why I went with Meath. You know, I did try to look at it as, like, you know, making a pundit decision and trying to be neutral. And I was saying to myself, they can match them everywhere. The bench that came on, like, that was massive. Like, I think on the line as well, that's where it was ultimately won. The decisions that were made, and they were made just at the right time. We were watching, Meath had only scored, I think it was 3 points in that second half in total. And they looked like they were tiring. You know, it was a very fast-paced game, and that was probably the biggest worry. Can they keep this up for the full game? They looked like they were tiring. There was one or two girls that I was looking at going, oh no, he needs to make the decisions quick. And he did. And Megan Tyne came on, and Niamh Gloggaly. And these are two girls that have always started on the Meath panel as long as I can remember. And them coming on is just serious. They're really young, like early 20s as well. They can run all day. Megan used to play that role of up and down the wing, back into the back line, filter back, and then break the pace. And she could run all day. She played for Meath Camogie as well. So seeing her come in, and that's what she did. She just cleared the ball out and gone. And then she ran back, sprinted back, and then she got the ball and gone again. And Niamh was the same on the other wing. So see on that sideline, that's where it was ultimately in the end as well. Like, that decision to bring them on when they did was a massive decision.
Why did Dublin lack answers at times yesterday, Aisling? Did he feel that they almost got caught? They didn't get caught unawares. Like, I mean, it seemed that in a lot of the preview, there was a sense that Meath were going to do what they did in terms of getting a lot of bodies back and breaking at pace. So why did Dublin look like they got taken by surprise at times during the game?
Yeah, they really did. And I was shocked by that as well. Because Mick Bowen's comments as well during the week, that he had said, you know, I don't know a hell of a lot about them, but I will do my homework. And he did do his homework. But yeah, I don't know. They definitely didn't, like, me definitely had the system and the tactics right. And Dublin looked a bit rattled. You know, they really did. They didn't know what was going on. And I think they just couldn't get in on goal. Me blocked up the D so much that they could not get through, and they just kept pushing them out. And Hannah Tyrrell was phenomenal for them yesterday. She really was. But yeah, they just didn't, I don't think, really got their tactics right on the day. And McBowen, he spoke after, he was very emotional speaking, and he said, look, I don't know, did I get it wrong? I wasn't expecting this. And he said, I thought we were in phenomenal condition and shape, but he said, my God, you know, Meath are in some shape. And again, he said he's never seen this type of game in the ladies game before, so it was unbelievable to watch. But I think everything just went right for Meath as well with their tactics, and everyone bought into it. Everyone knew what they were doing. That's something that the girls will always tell you, like, everybody has a job. We all know what we're doing, and they stick to it, you know. So yeah, they just got it right, I think.
This might be a hard one for you to answer neutrally, but how did yesterday compare atmosphere-wise to the other finals you'd been at? Because obviously there was a big thing made of getting over 50,000 people in attendance before the pandemic, for the last final before the pandemic. But it did feel yesterday there was something unique about the way the Meath supporters were gathered at the Hill, especially at full-time whistle.
Yeah, it was. I'm actually, shaking thinking about it. I haven't experienced that as a Meath fan, definitely not. As women's football, it was something else. Just everybody there was just like, this is a great advertisement for ladies football. It was brilliant. So good.
What does it mean for the future in terms of the rivalry?
This is the start of the Leinster rivalry. It really is. We've seen Westmeath yesterday as well. They're going to come up into it. So, you know, there's going to be a few good games in the Leinster Championship, which we've lacked for years now. So that'll be great to see. And it's only the start between this Meath and Dublin rivalry for sure. There wasn't a hell of a lot in it yesterday. We talked about Emma Duggan's goal. That was probably the game-changing moment. If she meant it or not, it went in, and that's probably where it was won. So, you know, it could have went either way at times. Second half, Dublin outscored Meath, so you look at it that way. Ultimately, the best team won on the day, but I think there's going to be serious games to come. And just as Owen was saying, just on the atmosphere, it was honestly incredible. I was looking around me and everybody was just screaming, cheering, no matter what. It just for the game itself, we needed that. The last two finals were there were poor standard, 2 years ago, Galway and Dublin, that was really poor standard, really low scoring. And sometimes you just felt with the women's game, it got to the stage and then it doesn't perform. And then everyone, you know, goes away thinking that's what women's football is. And that's not what it is, you know. So thank God yesterday was a phenomenal game, serious performance by both teams. And they put on a spectacle and everybody's talking about it, and that's what we want.
Yeah, 100%. And who were you thinking about, Ashley, when the final whistle was blown? What was your immediate kind of, where did this come from?
Just thinking about all the girls, I suppose, that went before as well. The girls all talked about it. A few of them were up on the stands and they never got to see these moments. They never got to experience them. I suppose they drove it on for so long. So for me to do that for them as well was something else. I was just thinking about, I suppose, some of the girls. Aideen Leahy, she's had a huge year. She lost her mom not too long ago. And yeah, she's someone who's really put a serious amount of effort in to get on the team. So I was so delighted for her, and she had a massive game as well. And yeah, just delighted for all of them. My teammate as well, Katie New, she had a phenomenal game. So it's just brilliant. It's brilliant for the game, and it's definitely brilliant for me. We're back.
And how were the celebrations?
Brilliant. I was just trying to finish up and I got down to Drumcondra then, just onto the streets, and everyone was just out around the bars and, yeah, more than all outside rather than in the bars. And yeah, we were just singing away. Beautiful Meath was sang a few hundred times and the crack was good. And then they went back to Knightsbrook and Trim then. So yeah, I was getting sent all the videos and WhatsApps were flying. Just a brilliant night there. So I'd say there'll be days of celebrations, if not weeks, to come.
Genuinely, it does kind of feel like a relic has come back. That now you just say there, Meath is back, the singing is back around this county. It's genuinely not something that we've really witnessed in our lifetimes anyway, Aisling. This is a proper sort of nostalgia trip for a lot of people who perhaps are old enough to remember.
Did they not win an All-Ireland in 1999?
I mean, I don't remember 1999, so
I remember. No, but yeah, that's true, because I don't know what age I was, but I remember them coming back to the county club that year. I remember Sean Boylan, Graham Garrity, Trevor Giles, all of them, and remember being in awe, running up to get autographs, and that was what was happening for the Meade girls. You know, it was just like a flip, and Sean Boylan was there at that right moment for Vicky Wall, and I was like, this is just it, a 360, it's unbelievable to see. And yeah, it's just amazing. Like the scenes, I suppose we never have got to experience too many of them because the Colm O'Rourke all those years too, you know, they were what, the 80s and that, so we never got to experience them. But I think for years to come, we will get to see the Meade ladies doing it. And as Vicky, I think, said before the game, she's like, when we pulled up to get on the bus yesterday, you know, everybody was in the women's jersey. Like, everyone was wearing the women's jersey. This has never happened before. So it's just so nice to see. And I think a lot of kids, anyone, boys, girls, whatever, will get serious inspiration from this.
They need to get that women's jersey reprinted a lot because it rings a lot of bells for a lot of people, and it's a good opportunity for them to raise a bit of cash as well. Aisling, great stuff. Congratulations on calling this about 5 months ago. It is the outstanding call in the history of OTB. I've got to say that. Ooh, nobody else
I'll
would.
Take that.
Yeah,
yes.
100%.
Thank you, dear.
Well, listen, well done to everybody. The other thing is, one last bit is... listening to Cora, she was like, this is the first game I remember feeling like a fan at. And that's the power of that. So like, the greatest women's Gaelic footballer of all time is reduced to like simply enjoying it as a fan, desperate for me to win as well. I think you'd obviously infected her at some point along the way with the Meade virus.
Honestly, you should have seen her. Like, she was grabbing my arm at one point, and you know, we were both looking, going, they can't lose this, they can't lose this. And she was like, you know, having to do with the updates too. I was like, here, you can't be biased here. And everyone was around us with Meade flags, sort of waving them over us. And she's like, this is incredible. And she was screaming for what, like, she was telling them what to do. You know, she was like, hold the ball, go this way. Screaming, like, you know, it was just brilliant for them. It's a great story. Obviously, Dublin, as we said, are phenomenal, phenomenal team. And they've got to the game to this point. And I think it's important we remember that too.
Brian Dillon has been in touch on YouTube to say, lads, as a Kildare man, I never thought I'd say this, but I bloody loved that match yesterday and was absolutely delighted for me. The build-up of noise as the seconds ticked down was incredible. There's like a very short window, Aisling, where we are still, as Kildare people, happy for you. I'd say it's about 5 hours away from running out. And after that, it's we can go back to hating each other again along the border. But in the meantime, congratulations on that. And then final one, Mick Kelly
Thank
says,
you.
A word for both Wicklow and Westmeath, who won junior and intermediate finals yesterday, having both been beaten in the equivalent finals last year. I wonder, is this a trend for such teams? That's the other thing, is that you really need other counties to look at what Meade have done, take it as inspiration, go away, get organised, and properly ride the boom of numbers that are coming through, because there is clearly a boom in numbers coming through in the teenage years particularly. There's a big opportunity for the LGFA to become, you know, if not the dominant, certainly the equivalent of soccer in Ireland.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I see it definitely in my club. All the clubs around Meade, I think we've over 7,000 members. It's something mad. And, you know, the girls are really enjoying their football. Everybody is staying on and playing. When I suppose when you hit fifth, sixth year, you might have went off and did other things and didn't bother. But that's not the case anymore. Like, it really isn't. And that's only the last couple of years that we're seeing that. So, yeah, all of these girls are probably just inspiring a serious amount of women to keep involved and to keep playing. Mark, see what they can do.
Mark Turning says, ask Aisling who's winning the lads final.
No, you need to give me a minute. I think I'll go with my head and my heart again. Oh God, no, I have to say Mayo is my heart. I've got family in Belmullet. That's my heart, but I think I'm very scared with this Tyrone team. That's what I'll say.
I
want it to be Mayo's year.
You're saying Tyrone.
I'm worried.
I think Mayo got carried away. I think that there's a good chance that a couple of their best players, well, we know Killian O'Connor's not going to be playing. There's a good chance Oisín Mullen's not fully fit. I think, Owen, you're too certain about this too early.
I don't know. Well, I'm
going to talk you out of Mayo by the end of the week.
You really need to change your mind if you're going for a Tyrone at this point. Because like we were saying earlier on, that Joe Brawley and Colm O'Rourke put the kiss of death on them yesterday. He's done the opposite by tipping them. So it's evenly poised once again in the fate categories.
I'm like this. I really am like this for this one. I don't know. Everything tells me has to be Mayo's year. They can't have bet Dublin all for nothing, because it will be all for nothing. It will be. No one's going to remember if they don't go all the way. So Yeah, but I'm really, really afraid of this Tyrone team. I still, I said it before, I don't think we've seen the best of them. But I genuinely believe, I don't think we have. They're only getting going. So it's a really worrying one for Mayo, I think.
All right, Aisling, good stuff. We'll talk to you soon. Cheers.
Brilliant. Thanks, lads.
Aisling O'Reilly there, celebrating Meath's victory. OTBAM is brought to you by Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette. Put your best face forward with their new and improved razors. Join us tomorrow morning on OTBAM from 7:30. We're going to talk to Michaela and Aidan Walsh back from the Olympics. There's build-up to Ireland against Serbia and plenty of GA as well.
OTB AM with Gillette. Put your best face forward with our new and improved razors.